Hello, everyone. So a few people have asked me, what's happened to Goodfella? We haven't had him on for a while. Have we fallen out? And no, we haven't fallen out. And I've just been a bit busy, I guess. And he's been busy when I've not been busy. So, you know, life gets in the way. But he'll be back this weekend, this Saturday, at 8 o'clock, usual time. And hopefully we will have funny stuff to talk about. In the meantime, since I'm doing this as a live hangout, because it seemed like the easiest way to do it, to be honest, I'm going to figure out how these things work. So if anyone's actually watching this and wants to help me along with this in the comments, that would be greatly appreciated, because I really have no idea what I'm doing. Hello, everyone in the comments. It's going very well. How's it going with you, Live Rare? So I'm going to try and, like, playing YouTube videos in the Hangout, because there are videos that I would like us to all be able to see and discuss, but it's obviously not something we've been able to do before, because I suck at this. Right, I'm going to try and play a video, and if you guys can tell me whether you see anything or not, that would be wonderful. Can anyone see that? Sandra guy, did you see that? I've got to wait for the comments to catch up. No, I don't. Is that a 4chan thing, right? I tried going on 4chan once a while ago, and I just didn't understand it. I think I'm too old for it. Right. So you guys didn't see the video. Okay. I wonder, is there a way to make this... I wonder why you didn't see that. Okay. I'm just Googling. Sorry for the delay here. Because I thought that was how you did it, with the YouTube app, and apparently not. I use a PC. Topkick. I don't really understand why the Mac's only got one button. I've never used them, so I don't know whether they're any good or not. But, it doesn't work with Hangouts on air. Okay. Right. New Google search. Maybe it's in the actual settings of the thing itself. Screen share. I regret this already. Did any of you guys see any of that screen sharing that I just did? I don't know what you guys can see. I do actually. I could watch the video, but I take it you're not seeing anything but the... Right? I'll see if I can find her. Wait, did you actually see the screen sharing thing? I wish the delay on the comments wasn't so long. Because it means I have to sit here for a couple of minutes waiting for the answer before I can go any further. Right, okay. That's something. But I suspect you probably won't get the sound. Right, okay, the screen share is definitely useful then, because I can get the news articles that we're talking about or something like that up. As I'm aware, Goodfellow will be able to do these things as well, so I'll talk him through it and we'll be able to figure out. Okay, let me just see what else I've got here. Yeah, sorry, this isn't a bit more riveting, guys. Thing is, if I do the screen share, I'm going to play a video and screen share it. And if by some miracle you get sound through, then do tell me. But I can't imagine it's going to be the case, is it? ManyCam. I've never even heard of it. You guys can hear that video. Right, that's excellent. A fucking bam. Okay, low quality. Okay, let me get someone speaking and you guys can tell me if that you can understand what it's saying. Oh, I know. If you can understand what Henry Kissinger is saying, what? Oh, fuck off.
I'm out of it for a long time. But you know history, and you know I know Shai, and you know the Russians. I have done my utmost to prevent the president for whom I was working from talking on the phone in the middle of a crisis with the head of state of another country, even more an authoritarian country, because.
How's that? And can you hear me talking over it?
You must have.
I assume you probably can, but I don't know what the sound levels are like. Feedback loop. Could you explain that a little bit more, please? I did deliberately try to choose someone who would be difficult to understand, even under good circumstances. So if you can just understand him, then if I get someone... I think I already have done that. Let me just check that. When you say soundboard, do you mean stereo mix? Right, okay, that's a good start. If I make that my default, you can't hear me. Right, yeah, you should be able to. Okay, doesn't sound like anyone can hear me now.
Trading 212. Anyone can trade on the.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Windows 8.
Thank you.
If I can get to it, man.
In 2008, my slogan was, yes, we can. In 2013, my slogan was, control, alt, delete.
Hey, Cynic. Nice to see
you. Plus side,
tell me if you can hear what Obama's saying.
Into one of the year's biggest movies.
Right, okay, excellent.
But rather than dwell on the past, I would like to pivot to this now. Let's welcome our headliner this evening, Joel McHale.
Jesus, is he the president of your country? What the fuck is he doing? He sounds like he's a stand-up comedian. Okay, great. That's all really good. Thing is, the Sandra guy, I benefit from adverts, so, you know, I don't want to use Adblock for other people. Yeah, Cynic, I've just sent you an invite. I don't normally send invites on the fly, but I'd like to have you on to talk to you. And since you're around... That's true. Boris Johnson does sound like a comedian. Thankfully, he's only the mayor of London. I think Boris Johnson's he is actually quite an intelligent guy. He's not an idiot. He's a buffoon, you know. No, Goodfellow wasn't meant to be here. This was just an announcement, and just to test, see if I could get this working. Well, Cynic, I've sent you the invite. You have to accept it. I am a complete square. I'm actually not. I really don't think I am, obviously, but I just, you know, I can't be bothered with Adblock, to be honest. It's more hassle to install it than it is to just skip the advert. This is why Generation X will never achieve anything. I've sent Cynic the invite, so hopefully he can find it and join us for an impromptu conversation. Monsieur Blanchat, that is true. That is true. It should just come up in your Google notifications, Cynic. I'll send you another one. Listen, the British have done enough, okay? We can sit on our laurels and say, you know what? It's up to you guys to take it from here. We've accumulated the sort of cultural wisdom that you guys don't have. You know, it's been a long time coming. I think we've quite happily passed on the reins of empire to the Americans. It's your job now. I am, of course, talking out of my ass. Britain would love to be part of the empire, apparently. This is weird. I'm not used to being on this by myself. That's a good question. What am I playing? I'm not. I've actually completed the 50th level of Necromancer, which is 50 out of 50. Cynic, I think you just sign into your YouTube page and then you get the notifications in the top right and it'll be one of those. I'll send it again. Yeah, I've completed the 50th level of Necromancer. We've got almost half of the character models in now, which is really going to be the thing that's holding it back from release. But yeah, now it's polishing. And this is the bit where I actually get to start showing people how it looks and how it plays and stuff like that. Because I really the pre Kickstarter stuff that you can see is really poor quality. I'm looking back now and thinking, Jesus, we were fucking optimistic, you know. But we succeeded in it, so it's, you know, not unfounded, I guess. But it was really like looking back, it's like, oh God, this is ugly as sin. People have suggested putting in a versus mode, because originally it was just going to be like a tablet strategy game where the levels aren't particularly big, and you're like a character that moves around the Necromancer, and you can raise zombies and different kinds of zombies and different kind of groups with and you can command them and stuff like that. You've got to try and take out a specific team of heroes, and people are saying, well, why don't you control the heroes? And that's a great idea. And now that I've done all the levels, I'm thinking, well, I could do that when I really should be doing the polishing. We've not tried greenlighting on Steam yet. The pre Kickstarter stuff that you can see. You might need to pause the video in the background, Cynic.
Alright, I'm here.
How's it going?
Alright, and yourself, sir?
Very, very well, thank you. So I hear you've been away.
Yes, I have. Been out in the oil fields.
Do you want to tell everyone? Because I think people have been wondering where you've been.
Basically out in the oil fields of North Dakota, working for a petroleum company. 14 to 16 hour days, those are fun, with the occasional 20 hour day.
Yeah. So you're part of the machine then.
Yep, but money's a necessity, man. What can I say?
Yeah, no, don't worry, man. Are you being paid well, at least?
It's all right. It's mainly the overtime where I make most of the money. Yeah. 102 hours every week.
Jesus Christ, man. I think there are only 168 hours in a week.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for those extra hours of sleep.
So when is it you're back from that?
I get back to that after I buy a truck and head back. I'll be there for 6 months, and I'm going to be heading back on Sunday.
Right, okay. So sometime next year people can expect more videos from you then?
Well, if I can... Well, I will be getting a computer up there, and I plan to make one before I leave back for the oil fields, but yeah, that's when the majority of my videos will come up.
Cool. Can you give us a teaser of what you've been... Well, what it's going to be about?
I guess I can.
Don't feel pressured. You don't have to.
No. Just because a guy is big, ripped, and can bench press 500 pounds does not mean he does not gossip like a 16-year-old girl.
That so is he doesn't, one of the, he doesn't do what to a 16-year-old girl, sorry? I missed
he
it.
He does not mean he doesn't gossip like a 16-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In the back end, one thing I've learned is if you've got nothing to do, you're going to talk about other people.
Oh, what was the old... Was it Mark Twain quote? The intelligent people talk about concepts and stuff like that, and it goes down until, you know, idiots talk about people.
People of mediocre intelligence talk about other people, people of moderate intelligence talk about events, and people of high intelligence talk about ideas and concepts.
There we go. I happen to love that. Because I'm a conceited arsehole.
Well, you're not alone there.
No, it's good to have you here, actually. I've been meaning to invite you, but I've been really busy. You know, just... So there have actually been, like, important people, like, and not important people, but, like, people who are connected to events that I wanted to discuss, you know, and stuff like that. And I didn't really expect to do, like, serious stuff. I've missed kind of just doing hangouts where I piss around with people.
Oh, no, I understand. But I've been out of the loop for the past 5 weeks. I haven't been able to access the internet, so I have no idea what the hell's going on in the manosphere, or the politics, or anything.
Well, since everyone's here... And the manosphere, I do actually have something that I was going to talk to Goodfellow about, and I will do, obviously. And if Goodfellow pops up in the chat, then I'll obviously invite him. I don't know if he's around tonight or not. I haven't spoken to him. I assume everyone saw Razorblade Candy's ideological purification video.
I saw that, and I'm actually very interested, because Barbarossa did make a video about... ending MGTOW relativism, and I made a video trying to get specifics on that, but he never got back to me, so...
Yeah, and what are your thoughts on it?
I would like to know what exactly is going to be solidified in terms of MGTOW objectivism. I mean, in my video, I stated that I've seen the tenets. I mean, don't get married.
Don't cohabitate.
Don't cohabitate. Even that, I'm not sure if that would be considered a tenet or an objective tenet of what it means to be a man going your own way.
Yeah.
Statement of self-ownership, statement of being a MGTOW, obviously. But I want to know exactly what it is that they plan to say is... objectively what it means to be a man going your own way.
Yeah, I'm with you there, because I wouldn't be surprised if I then had to then say I can't really class myself as this, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because for me it was more the sort of statement of self-ownership that really... I think that's pretty much all you need to consider yourself a MGTOW. It's so simple. It's, you know, you're your own sovereign person and act like it, you know. And if, you know, I'm not actually necessarily against marriage. I'm really against the way that marriage is abused. You know, if two people want to get married, then go ahead. You know, it's really none of my business. But I don't think the state should then have the power to be able to enforce the woman's position over the man's, you know.
Right, right.
So, I mean, maybe I'm just completely well out of the realms of MGTOW at this point. You know, I mean, I may well be, but it seems to be getting very serious, and it really did just seem to be about the self-ownership. I mean, what do you reckon?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, maybe this is the proper step for what MGTOW actually needs, because in terms of it becoming a movement, because as far as I'm concerned, and I stand by this, MGTOW is just a banner for men who want to be a part of it. There's really no objective goal of men going their own way. You talk to different men, you get different answers of what they want. Mm. I mean, I was talking to RBK. I've only had like 3 or 4 conversations with him on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I was talking to him... stupid phone. I was talking to him about... Oh, shit. My memory's going.
It's all right, man. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
And basically, I was trying to understand when he said that MGTOWs are, by our very nature, MRAs. Because you...
Yeah.
Have you seen the video?
I saw the video, and that was something that stuck out for me as well. It kind of seems actually very counterintuitive to me, because a men's rights activist seems to be someone who's engaging, whereas a MGTOW seems to be someone who's disengaging. So...
Yeah, and that's how I see it, the three camps. One is about fighting the system, one's about walking away from the system, one's about indulging the system.
Absolutely, that's exactly how I see it. And so I found the MGTOWs are, by default, MRAs. I mean, I've got a lot of respect for what Raysburg County does, but... And I don't even mean to say but, because that disqualifies what I've just said, you know.
Yeah.
There are some times, though, I really don't agree with them on some points, and I think this happens to be one of them, you know, and I mean that in a respectful disagreement. I obviously don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but I think this is quite an important point as well. It's kind of like that's sort of the language a feminist would use, you know. It's like, oh, well, then you're a feminist, you know, and it's just like, I rather don't agree.
Yeah, and I guess the main thing is, what is it to be a quote-unquote not real MGTOW? Because Barbarossa did bring up a good point when, if some feminist Mangina does come out and say, yes, I am a MGTOW, do we say, no, you're not a real MGTOW? Or, I mean, I think there should be some kind of line that distinguishes what it means to be a man going your own way. Do I think that there should be some kind of tribunal where we all sit together? All right, is this person a real man going his own way? No. Yeah, by the same token, I do believe that there should be something there.
I absolutely agree. I guess the thing that worries me about it is... shit, my computer... I hadn't touched the mouse in ages, and my computer started shutting down. I think, yeah, my real problem with it is the institutionalization of it. The point of it does seem to be very much... It really just seems to be the self-ownership thing, as far as I can see. You know, just understand that you're your own person, you make your own decisions. And a person who thinks that, you know, I am a sovereign person, and I do make my own decisions. And then when they look at the system they're presented with, the only logical option is to opt out. You know, it's like, no, that's a bad system. You know? That system doesn't actually allow for that. And so I find it odd that I really don't think that codifying it is going to help any. You know, maybe like the one principle, you know, keep it as simple as possible. But beyond that, I wouldn't try, you know.
Well, yeah, and I know this kind of contradicts what I just said, but if we're going to... That's if MGTOW does become institutionalized. I find the concept of institutionalizing MGTOW to be counterproductive to the entire point of MGTOW, because I like it as a banner that people just kind of fall under. They say, hey, I'm a MGTOW. I like being a MGTOW. I like being who I want to be. I like defining myself. I like defining... Isn't that the whole point of what men going there was supposed to be, to say, fuck your definitions, fuck your standards, I'm going to do what I wish to do?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I mean, the first conversation I had with Goodfellow on these chats was, you know, what we both... he was like, of course I'm a MGTOW. And it was just like, but there's nothing to say really that he is, you know, necessarily. You know, it's not that he specifically makes MGTOW videos. He makes videos about things that he's concerned about. You know, I'm putting words into his mouth here, but it seemed, from my perspective, that it was just about that statement of self-ownership, that, you know, I'm making my decisions. You know, these are the decisions that I think are the right thing to do, sort of thing. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's. I'm with Raging Golden Eagle on this one, though. I'm not really one for labels too much. And you know, like he said, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to do my own thing. And I think that's... I mean, that is ultimately what I always considered MGTOW to essentially be. I'm not part of the inner circle of MGTOW, so I don't really know. I'm just kind of an outside spectator.
Right, and you know, I consider myself to be on, well, not on your level, but in the same boat.
Yeah, absolutely. I see you very much as one of my peers, You know, you, Goodfellow, all those guys, I definitely see you guys as my peers.
Right, and sorry, hold on a sec. Raging Golden Eagle, we need to meet up for a drink while I'm in town, so keep that in mind.
I'm jealous of that. That'd be a good drink, man, honestly.
It's all right. But yeah, so, I mean, the whole debate of ideological purification, I don't agree with it. I'm actually fairly interested, because Razorblade Candy's not a stupid guy. He's
not at all. I know,
stretch of the imagination, so I would very much like to hear what he comes up with. Am I going to agree with it? Most likely not, but, you know, it's his opinion, his decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm completely with you on that one. Just, you know, I'm very, very interested to what he's saying. I'd be surprised if I agree with it, judging from the direction he's going in at the moment, but I don't have to agree with it. That's the thing, you know. It's neither here nor there whether I do so or don't. So.
Right, right.
So, anyone in the comments got anything? Or do you want to, sorry, go on a different tangent here, because I'm starting to think this is getting a bit serious.
Don't get married. Dude, up in the back end, that is all people are there for. That is all people are there for. It's just like, oh, well, my wife's needing alimony, and I got to keep the kid happy. I got to keep her and the courts off my ass. So I got to make a lot of money just to support myself. And it's just like, man, I am so glad I'm not in your shoes.
Yeah.
And then the worst thing is, when I say I'm not going to get married, oh, dude, why aren't you going to get married? You meant get happy and all that shit. I'm like, really? Aren't you the guy going through a divorce right now?
I've seen marriages. What are you talking about? They're happy. Absolute nonsense.
But it was so, it was a surreal experience when you're talking to somebody who's going on and on about their divorce, and then they ask, well, why aren't you going to get married? It's like, really? You've just told me why I'm not getting married.
Do you think he's obviously not thinking of marriage as what's happening to him? He's thinking of the ideal marriage, isn't he? The fairy tale. He must be. He must be.
Absolutely.
It's bizarre.
It is, and that's the thing that I don't understand, because, I mean, what's the definition of insanity? Repeating the same experiment over and over and over, expecting a different result.
Absolutely. I can give you another definition of insanity that I recently got from a friend of mine, and it wasn't because he told me it, it was because he showed me it. Impregnating a feminist.
Oh my god.
Impregnating a feminist law student.
What?
I'm not joking. I'm not making that up, right? And the thing is, he kind of fucking deserves it because he's a bit of a dick.
That is.
And so he thinks he's like, in England we've got the chav, and chavs think they're like gangsters or something, but they're not. Oh. They're rubbish. And so it's a very different kind of sort of culture, but it's similar in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is to get as many women as you can. But the thing is, a lot of these women, they're not above being welfare queens, and so. These guys, my friend's got three children with three different women. And he's been in more fights than I've had hot dinners. And he's good at them, you know. And he's deep down, he's really soft, and he's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit of a nice guy, but he's in a culture where he's got to be like a brash twat. And so he ends up making brash twatty mistakes when they're egging him on. And anyway, he started seeing this girl, and when they started going out, she was quite meek and, like, not quiet, but she was, you know, more restrained. But because he's such a twat, as the relationship's gone on, she's become a feminist, and more and more and more and more and more of a feminist. And then she got pregnant, and now she's... I think she may have actually given birth to the child, and he's...
Oh, God, please tell me it's not a boy. Please tell me it's not a boy.
I think it might actually be a boy.
Oh, poor
I know.
Poor kid.
And the thing is, it literally, it was like, you know, on the old MGTOW forum, where it was just the horror stories in the anecdotal section, and it was this. I would, if that was still up, and I still went there, I would still, I would put this up there, because he literally, she literally just turned the full force of what she knew of the law on him, and he doesn't know shit because he's a street chav. You know, he doesn't know anything about the law, and so when literally she was like, "Right, I'm moving out, and you're gonna have to pay for my place," and he was just like, "What?" And then it just got worse and worse from there. And then she eventually kind of turned around and she said, "Okay, now I will be with you, but these are the conditions." And he is such a broken man now that he agreed to it, and now he is living with her under her rule, effectively, in an apartment that she owns, but not owns, but you know, she's on the tenancy agreement, but he's paying for, and he knows that at any time she could kick him out and take his, you know, make sure he can't see his child. And it's just like, Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, he has his moments where I'm like, mate, you've been a complete twat, but you know, I don't think he deserved that, you know.
No. I mean, that's like rape. I don't care what a woman's done. I don't think she deserves to be raped. I don't care what a man's done. He doesn't deserve to be raped. Financial rape falls under that.
Yeah, any kind of rape, you know. But honestly, when it was unfolding, there were times she made him give up his Facebook account to her, so she was controlling it, because she'd posted something on his wall, if I recall correctly, and I'm not making this shit up, I swear to God, everyone, I'm not making this shit up, right? If I recall correctly, it was a picture of a cup that said male tears on it, and she was just like, ha ha ha, or something. And I was just like, Dan, are you going to take that? commenting on it. And it got worse and worse, and she started going off the deep end, putting really crazy I am the queen comments and stuff like this. And it's just like, holy shit, she's gone mad with power. And then she ended up deleting me from his friends list and sent me a message pretending to be him. But he can't fucking spell. Every message he sent to me is, you know, is just lacking in all vowels. And she, the law student, sent me a message that was beautifully typed up saying, "Hello, this is Dan. I've decided to delete you from my friends list because you're so mean to my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah." I said, do you think I'm really that fucking stupid as to think Dan could have spelt all those words correctly? Jesus fucking Christ. And yeah, literally, that went on for ages until, like, it got too much for him, and he managed to somehow get his Facebook account back, so now I'm back on his friends list. So, I swear to God, I'm not making it up. She is the archetypal feminist, and this is what I mean. I wouldn't be so against feminism if it wasn't directly impacting my life and the life of my friends, you know, the people I actually care about. It's crazy. It's actually doing damage in the real world. This shit has to be stopped.
Yeah, and holy shit!
I know.
Holy shit! And I know I may be stepping on toes when I say this, but the fact that you stayed with her, I mean, that there's it's like, you know what? Just financially get it over with, because this, when you take, no, I'm sorry, you do not sacrifice your dignity, your pride, and your self-respect for money. That's no, I couldn't do it.
I know. I can't believe he can do it. But the thing is, she's a lot smarter than he is, you know, and so she's used that, because he's the bad boy, you know, for her, he's like the bad boy and stuff, but he's not actually a bad guy, so she can use feminist guilt tripping on him, and he feels bad about it, and, you know, and so she's literally managed to bring him to heel, and it's really sad to see, and not that he was a dick, but, oh, yeah, I'm totally with you. Ah,
that's horrible.
It's, oh, I just can't believe it, you know.
No, you know what that reminds me of? That kind of reminds me of my sister. And she's not a feminist by any stretch of the imagination, but she is the opposite. She is the tradcon parasite, if there ever was one.
Does she rule the roost?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so basically, she claims to be this independent, I'm a strong woman, blah, blah, blah. Never worked a day in her life. Has three kids by three different men.
Oh, Jesus.
The guy she's with now earned about $60,000 being a prison guard. And he went from a happy bachelor, living in his apartment, you know, buying all his toys, living life great, to now being in debt up to, you know, credit cards.
Jesus.
Borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and it is just the most depressing thing to watch because, I mean, when I first met the guy, he was an all right guy, had that shine in his eye, you know, smiling a lot. And here he is about a year later. The shine is gone. There's a permanent scowl. I was like,
that poor guy.
And, I mean, we warned him. Me and my family warned this guy. I said, dude, listen to me. You do not want to do this. You don't. You have no idea how fucked up your life is going to be. I know I'm not saying this because I don't like my sister. I'm saying this because...
Oh, yeah.
I showed him pictures of her exes, the before and after. I said, this is going to be you. You listen to me.
That's genius.
And
That's a great idea.
I said, you're going to do it. It'll come crying to us. And sure enough, 6 months in, what the hell happened?
Oh, man. I really hope the pussy was worth it. Not that, you know, not to insult you. You know I mean.
Oh, you can insult my... Please do. Please. I hate her. I fucking hate her.
Ah, she that bad, is she?
Okay, so... it's gotten to the point where her own kids have accidentally called me dad because he can't keep a male role model in their lives for more than 6 months. I am surprised this guy stuck around half as long as he has.
How long have they been together?
About a year and a half.
Christ. And how old does he look now?
He aged like a president.
Oh, yeah, I do feel bad for you. Well, I'd feel bad for your presidents if they weren't doing so well out of it. But, yeah, they do, man, don't they? They know something. That's the thing, I reckon. They know something.
Oh, yeah, they do. I mean, have you seen the way Obama's aged? You know, I don't like the guy, but damn.
Yeah, I have, actually. I was going to make a piss take video about it, but then I looked at it and thought, man, that's just sad, you know? Because the guy doesn't really seem to, like, want to engage in, like, matters of state very much. He seems very reticent to talk about politics, but as soon as you're getting up telling jokes, he comes alive. You know,
He's
in an element when he's talking to people and just having fun with them, you know? But as soon as he talks about, like, matters of state, he just looks like he wants to fall asleep.
Yeah, and, you know, politics... I mean, especially when you got insider knowledge like that, when he knows it's just political theater and rhetoric, it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, we're going to do stuff. And you know, I'm lying to you, but I got to sit up here, you know, give a show. So.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing's a joke, I swear. And the thing is, it's not really any different here, except I was looking at the backgrounds of the people who are currently in power here, and none of them are qualified to do shit. They're journalists, effectively, and some of them have been in government for too long, so they, like in the political system, so they know how it works, but it's just like, they could never be any more than mouthpieces, you know, by the complete lack of depth of knowledge of the subjects they're supposed to preside over. You know, not them saying I know any better, but I know they don't as well.
But you're not running for office.
Sorry?
Are you running for office?
No, God no.
Well, then you don't need to. You're not supposed to have to.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, if somebody's going to go out there and make political decisions and say I'm responsible for them, you know, I might want them to know a thing or two.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, so if I don't like, say, George Osborne, who's the current guy in charge of the economy, who would I like? And I thought, okay, I'd like someone who understood the international banking system for a start. So I'd probably have to get a banker. I don't really want a banker making decisions on, you know, on the country's finance from office. I mean, it's bad enough that they have so much influence behind the scenes. So what would I do? And I don't really know. I mean, I suppose find someone who isn't a banker but happened to know what they were talking about. Max Kaiser, I presume.
Okay, no, because this was a conversation I was having with a friend of mine a while ago. He asked me, what would it take for you to be wanting government? And I told him I'd want an oligarchy like we have. I mean, people call it a republic or a parliamentary system, but
it's an oligarchy.
If there's small groups of people making decisions, that's what we call an oligarchy.
Yeah.
But I'd also want it so that they had to face physical punishment. None of this fucking taking of their money or whatever, they had to face legitimate physical punishment if they broke their oaths. I mean, it's this vote them out crowd. It's like, what are you going to do? Vote them out? Okay. I'm just going to take my $10 million in lobbyist money and my congressional pension and fade away obscurely into non-existence. Oh, poor me. Poor me.
Yeah.
You guys showed me.
I'll take that consultancy position for a really expensive company, you know. Just, the whole thing's a joke. Tony Blair is the Middle East peace envoy. Holy shit. So I know it's very British-centric, but it's one of those things I can't get over. You know? What?
No, but what I would like to see is actual physical punishment. And I mean from the people who are the representatives, the quote-unquote, those who are they are representing. I want to see those people hold their representatives accountable. None of this, oh, well, you're a bad person, shame on you, blah, 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 okay, take your money to the bank and go ahead and get a nice cushy job.
Yeah.
I want to see physical punishment. I mean, why should any of these politicians listen to what anyone has to say? Why? And nobody can give me an answer for that. I mean, if I had the power, and let's say that I was a typical person, a typical politician, if I had the power to just do whatever I want, and the worst you're going to do is vote me out.
Yeah.
Is there really an incentive for me to give a shit what you have to say?
Absolutely not. I swear, right? I know it sounds silly, but I have often thought, what would I do if I had an angry pitchfork-wielding mob at my back? And storming into the Houses of Parliament would definitely be one of those things. You know, I imagine there are a lot of people in America who think, if I could just storm Congress with an angry mob, you know, I could get shit done.
That would do it. That, you know, I don't know, because I don't know how many people would actually take up the banner to do that. Because, I mean, you hear these people. I mean, let's take the Occupy protesters for a minute. When I was observing them, all I could think was, what do you feel as though you're accomplishing? Do you think that the representatives take anything more you say into consideration now than they did before? No.
Yeah, they don't care. If you've got no threat of violence, then there's no reason to not do what you want. You know, they're all like, "Not oh, non-violent protesters." It's like, well, they're not going to listen to you, are they? That's ridiculous. What's the point of a non-violent protest?
Exactly. Well, and I mean, you know, if you have some decent people who want to listen to you, then by all means have a protest. But if it's gotten to the point where people trust criminals more than they trust politicians, because I think Congress is at like a 7% approval rating,
yeah.
Are you serious? Are you seriously thinking that these people are going to listen to you?
It's absurd. There's I saw the free speech zones as well.
Here we go.
And I was just looking at that thinking, Jesus Christ, is something that future historians are going to say, well, they had free speech zones here and here, and that would de facto imply that, you know, the rest of it wasn't a free speech zone, so they didn't have freedom of speech. You know, that's how they're going to reason it. And it's true.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing, someone just brought some of the comments. Protesting is like slamming your door at your parents' house to show authority.
Yeah.
It's cute, it's quaint, really doesn't show that you're strong. Yeah. It doesn't show that you have power. The only way to live in, to show that you can, to show that authority, your own selfie, is to live independently of the system.
Hmm.
And I mean, that's what protests, I just can't take them seriously, because they don't change anything, or they can quote unquote change something.
Yeah, I agree. Not only when it actually gets violent does something happen. You know.
Well, yeah.
I'm not encouraging violence either. I would much rather if the system was actually willing to be reformed without violence. I mean, that would be awesome, but it's clear that it's not. And you know, that's why billionaires are saying, look, the pitchforks are coming. You know, there's a good reason for it, I think. They can see it happening. It's going to happen. I know. And yeah, I have Revolution.
Right. And I guess the only thing that gets to me is if something isn't working, then stop doing it. Stop pretending like you're doing something. Because there's one thing I can't stand. It's people patting themselves on the back, thinking they've accomplished something, and me looking around saying, well, yeah, the thing you wanted to change has changed. Except for, you know, this, 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 and this. Oh, and that, and that, and oh, and that too, and this. Well, shit, you didn't really accomplish anything, did you?
It's very much like a social hamster wheel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Bunch of people patting themselves on the back, thinking they're doing something, and everyone's just, like, pointing and laughing.
It's like, that's what I get about the Twitter sphere. When people are like, oh, Twitter exploded with comments, and it's like, fucking so what? You know, Twitter's always full of comments, for Christ's sake. You know, and that's all they are, comments. They don't change anything.
You know, yeah. Online petitions, there's another one that I get a kick out of.
Yeah.
There was one, I forget what it was for, but there was this one that was supposed to be, like, really big, and they got, like, 100,000 signatures. I think it was to repeal the NDAA.
Right.
And it didn't happen. Everyone was like, well, guys, we tried. And you're just like, no, you didn't. You signed a piece of paper.
Yeah, you did the minimum possible work. There's literally nothing you could have done less than that than do nothing.
I mean, this is like type, type, type. Revolution and freedom to the people. Seriously. All right. And I do have to address this because whenever I say protesting doesn't really change anything, people bring up the Martin Luther Kings and the stuff like that. people then did want the change. They were willing to get their asses beat, and they were willing to accept the punishments and the consequences and the violence that accompanied it. But today, no. They don't. They aren't willing... Go ahead.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen is a social justice warrior getting maced in the face. It's the... not just because I find them intrinsically annoying. It's more the complete shock by which they took it. I saw this video of this I don't know, 19-year-old girl, and she was just like hands out to the side, just oh my god, I can't believe this has happened to me, sort of thing. It's like, really, you're at a fucking protest, and you've got loads of armed police in front of you, and they're telling you to fuck off, and you're getting in their face, and they maced you. You know, how can you be like, I can't believe this happened to me? But that, I guess that's the entitlement, isn't it? Like you say, the protests with Martin Luther King, they expected to get their asses beat, and yet they did it anyway, which is why it had an effect. These kids aren't going back.
Yeah. And, well, wanted more government? There's more government for you.
Yeah, this is what you got.
Well, you asked for it. Don't come crying to us or crying to anyone. Be careful what you wish for.
Absolutely. That's actually right, something really interesting that I've noticed. It's the state is perfectly willing to indulge them until they try and reform the state. But there was this Noam Chomsky thing where he's like, look, the trick these days is to narrow the field of debate to a very sort of, you know, short range of opinions, but allow very lively debate within that range. So like the gay marriage thing. I'm sick of the gay marriage thing. I can't believe anyone was... I mean, I know that in America you've got loads of religious people who are against it, but... You know, come on. It's really not that important. If they want to be unhappy, let them be unhappy. You know, there are much bigger issues to talk about, and yet all I heard for months was, you know, a month or so, was gay marriage, and it's just like, that's so irrelevant, you know?
And, you know... Oh, Goodfellas in.
Hey, I know, I messaged him to see if he could join, but his okay. Boy's still up. For some reason, at 10:15 at night. So,
Nah, that's kids for you.
No, I know, I'm joking.
Ah. All right, so, oh, shit. But, yeah, I mean, and I do want to address the comments because they're giving me a whole bunch of examples. Yes, peaceful protesting does work if you're willing to fight.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of peaceful things that happened, but, I mean, the Black Panthers with the Martin Luther King and the blacks sit-ins and protests, Yeah, I mean, the whole point of these kind of protests where they show sympathy for the people getting, like, hurt and whatnot is that everybody else will stand up to defend them. That's not what's going to happen today because the other people who are sitting by and, you know, watching it happen aren't going to get up.
Yeah, I think that was actually the willingness to fight, even though it's a peaceful protest, but they are willing to fight. That was definitely what separated the social justice protest that I was watching, the Occupy protest for the social justice warriors. You know, that was what separated it from that. You know, not just that, obviously, but you know, that was the main principle. I think they were clearly not prepared to fight, and so all the police had to do was kind of mace them a little bit, and they all ran off screaming, and you know, went back to their middle class lives, I suppose.
Right, and yeah, so it's kind of like that. Oh shit, that Wendy Wu. Who was it that was on that radio show or that TV show that said, "Your white privilege will never be able to understand what I say, therefore I'm not going to explain it." And he says, "Go ahead and explain it." And she says, "Fucking, I'm not going to do it." It's like, lady. No, it was on a Thunderfoot video, and he called her out on it.
Right, okay.
It was that Asian woman? I forget
what her name. Oh, Sui Park.
Sui Park, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's living with her mom, has a bunch of... I mean, she's the definition of middle class, and she's going on about oppression.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Are you serious?
I'm subscribed to a feminist called Claudia Boleyn because I find her so amusing. She goes on about how much oppression she faces as a bisexual young white woman in Britain, and she's in the nicest upper middle class house you've ever fucking seen. You know, the place is just gorgeous, and it's like, oh, do you own that, do you? You know, you've not got any privilege going on at all. None at all.
And it just boggles my mind how people who appear to be so well off, you know, it's not like they have their face in the mud or anything like that, but I just can't take them seriously. It's like Big Red is the face of oppression.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at her. She's clearly been oppressed her whole life. You can tell because she's shouting in the face of her oppressor, "Shut the fuck up." I mean, I'm sure that's what every oppressed group has always done to their oppressors, with no reprisals whatsoever.
You fucking fuckface. Oh man, there was a video where they songified her. Oh dude, it was hilarious.
I haven't actually seen that, but I will find it.
It is hilarious. Oh. I'm reading fuckface.
In Canada as well. They seem to be most virulent in Canada, don't they? Of all fucking places on earth.
Yeah, actually, I've noticed that there's a lot... I don't want to say it's worse, but it appears to be a lot worse in Canada than it is here in the U.S.
Does it?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I see those kind of, you know, in-the-face, blah, 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 protests or feminists, they're always in Canada.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. It's weird. And the thing is, Canada is stereotyped for being too nice. You know?
Yes.
No one stereotypes an oppressive society as being too nice.
Yeah. I mean...
How would that happen? You know, how did it happen? They can't have been oppressing too many people.
Well, you must have been. You got women complaining in the streets.
Oh, God.
It must be bad.
Canada, look what you've done with independence. Just look at it.
Oh, man. So aside from that, what all has been going on?
What has been going on? The feminists have been going so far that there seems to be a bit of a schism within feminism. There are quite a lot of feminists saying, hey, this is going mental. What was the woman's name? Someone in the comments. There was the factual feminist. I can't remember her name. Christina Sommers, maybe. But she's a very intelligent, older academic lady. And she's been a feminist probably since, you know, the 70s, you know, when it actually meant something. And she's basically crusading against feminism now. She's effectively an anti-feminist because the things she's saying are just, let you know, she's arguing for the status quo. You know? So, you know, things can't be so bad if, like, old feminists are, like, saying, well, some old feminists are saying, oh, no. Obviously, Gloria Steinem's fully on the mad train.
Oh, yeah. Now I've got to go throw up. Thanks for mentioning that name. Gloria Steinem.
Oh, I know. I keep seeing, like, infographics of quotes of things she said, and I just think, just even if it's not a bad-sounding quote, I'm just thinking it's taken way out of context. You know? Like, the truth will make you set you free, but it'll make you mad first, and it's like, oh, yeah, but that depends on what truth means, doesn't it? You know, if your truth is feminism, then it's not true. It's madness.
And Sparta's not far behind.
Yeah.
You see, that's why I don't try to be funny in my videos. That's what happens.
Sorry.
I apologize. It's not funny. It's not funny.
I know. Sorry. I make enough shit jokes. It's what people do. Someone's asked me what my views on UKIP are. I don't know, really. I think political parties are all as obsolete as each other. I really think you need to be looking at the people with money and seeing what they're doing, because they're paying the politicians, which means they're calling the tune.
Yup.
I can think of individual politicians I like. Daniel Hannan is a man who I have a lot of respect for. He's this great guy. He thinks that the English system of values that we've exported to the world are by far the most logically superior, and I agree with him, to be honest. And it's not just because I'm English, but that is a large part of it. but the thing is, it's like inherent in wherever Englishmen tread. They brought this kind of primacy of the individual, and this is why I was arguing with someone about on this Feminist Inquisition video I did about. The point of an inquisitorial system, it makes the state the most important actor in the system of court, whereas in the Anglo-Saxon system, it makes the people involved the most important actors in the court, with the state as a mediator. You know, and that I know it sounds like a small, silly difference, but that is really important because so much flows from that concept. You know. And, yeah, Daniel Hannan really, he elucidates it far better than I can, and he's a master orator. Honestly, I'll probably do a video with some stuff in that he's had, because I would like to recommend people I actually think have some sense in them, because I spend a lot of time focusing on people who are idiots, and that can't be good, can it?
No, because then you start thinking everyone's an idiot.
Yeah.
And then you end up like me.
Yeah. Is there anyone that you respect particularly?
Well, in the UK, Nigel Ferguson was his name?
Nigel Farage, do you mean?
Farage, oh yeah. I knew I'd botch that somehow.
Yeah, the UKIP guy.
Was he the one who they call the British version of Ron Paul?
Well, I don't know. Who said that?
There was a video on him where he was, like, bitching out. Well, not bitching out, but where he was going after...
Internet Aristocrat.
The what?
Was it Internet Aristocrat's one?
I don't know, but he was going after some guy who he said was going to be the silent assassin of democracy or something like that, and then he says, you're not that silent, you're pretty noisy about it, aren't you?
that probably was him. I mean, it might not have been, I don't know, but that, to be fair, one of my favourite things is watching videos of the European Parliament when British people are speaking there, because they're talking past the Europeans, you know, because Britain's, everyone, I get this from Americans all the time, they go, oh, Britain's part of Europe, and it's like, no, it's really not, you know, You just have to look at the people the British send to the European Parliament to know how not part of Europe Britain is. Because we are literally the Eurosceptics in Europe. You know, there are others, but we're the big, like, voices. Because everything about Europe is designed from the state down, whereas everything about Britain is designed from the people up. And you know, the methods of thought about the function of state is you know, that way inclined. Whereas that's why the continent uses the inquisitorial system, like the French, they use the inquisitorial system in the methods of judgment. I think the Spanish do as well. It's just a different way of looking at it. I'm not necessarily saying it's inferior or superior, but on a moral sort of principle level, I think that is why so many British people are so Eurosceptic, and even the ones that are kind of pro-Europe don't really have too much pro-Europe in them when it comes to certain things. And it's, yeah, I don't know, I've got a bit of a waffle there, but sorry, I don't know where I was coming from that.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of we in America, and I may be the only one who says this, but we just love hearing British people argue because the voice, it just sounds awesome. It does.
I like to be honest. You know, that's the problem. I don't think people are very considerate of each other's feelings in Britain. Or at least, well, I mean, that was a problem. Now it's becoming a problem that they are. But yeah, I do, yeah, like the parliamentary question times where it's just a heated debate. I do quite enjoy that.
It is fun to watch.
Yeah.
I know it's immature, I know it's childish, but I just love hearing the British guys talking there.
I've had that as well, where I've been watching it and thinking, oh, come on, you know, the rest of the world's probably watching this and thinking, they just go hammer and tongs. But then I watch the rest of the world and it all kind of seems disingenuous, you know? It's all the facade, and I don't like it. So I'd rather them be a bit more puerile and honest about it than... Not that I think our politicians are honest, but I think that they're honest when they're arguing with each other. You know? I think that when they're insulting each other, it's an honest insult.
And I think America could take... Well, in all honesty... I mean, America is... I don't think we're known for our honesty. I think we're known for our fake kindness to others. And I know there are a lot of people from America going to be, you know, yelling at me. It's like, it's not fake, I'm not fake, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, in a... We say, excuse me, if you bump into somebody, you'll have that guy who, you know, watch where the fuck you're going. But most people will just say, excuse me, sorry, give you a happy smile if you're trying to talk to them, blah, blah, blah. Unless you're in, like, New York or one of the bigger cities. But the majority of it is just the fakest kindness that you've ever seen. It makes you sick to your stomach after you've looked at it for long enough.
Yeah.
You guys have the same problem in the UK?
I find have a nice day to be a really offensive thing. Really? As if they give a fuck. Don't patronize me for fuck's sake. I know you don't care about my day. You know, so when I'm being given, like, my food at, like, McDonald's or something, I used to live out in Germany, and there was an American base, on the British base that we were on. And so there was an American BX there. And so I got to meet Americans. And I found them incredibly nice people as individuals. You know, I went to a bunch of parties held by Americans and stuff. Absolutely lovely people. But when they were serving me, when I was, like, you know, shopping in the American shop there, they would be like, have a nice day, and it's just like, you don't know me, you know? You don't know me for how I'm about to disappear out of your life. Don't pretend by saying have a nice day that you give a fuck about my day. Just say thanks, you know, or whatever. Just, you know, I don't know, it's just me probably, it's really just me, but that just does my head in.
Yeah, and I've just kind of become accustomed to it, but it does make me a little uneasy. It's like, have a nice day, oh, you too, thanks, bye.
Yeah,
like, exactly. You don't give a shit. I don't give a shit about you, but, you know, gotta keep lightness. It's as fake as I can be, so let's make it as fake as I can be.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think you could be polite without being fake, you know?
Well, I mean, you've talked to the fake and nice people. It's like, the faker and nicer they become, the faker and nicer you become, and suddenly you're talking this high-pitched voice, oh, that is so great, I'm so happy to hear that, and you're just like, why the hell am I talking like this? I don't know you. Look what you've done to me.
I just want to say that that guy T just said, I noticed Sargon's accent isn't as posh as Claudia's, and he's absolutely right. My accent isn't as posh as Claudia's, and it's something I do intend to change. I actually come from parents who were low class, very working-class parents. And they escaped working-classdom and worked very hard. My dad joined the RAF when he was 16 and stuck it out until he was about 50. And my mum didn't get any qualifications whatsoever and is now the manager of a mental health institution. So they became very middle class. And they lived in a time when it was bad to sound like you were a common pleb. And so they just everyone tried to speak correctly on the council estate where my parents grew up. And that's interesting, I find, because that's where my accents come from. And I've returned to the lower class. So, yeah. Just
okay, so here's one. Here's a topic I've been meaning to discuss with somebody of, you know, actual intelligence.
Oh, thank you.
Being who you are versus being better. I'm sure you've heard the whole, but I'm just who I am, and, you know, stuff like that. But by the same token, everyone just wants to be who they are. But who you are is being who you are worth associating with.
What's the definition of better in this case?
Quote-unquote self-improvement. Yeah, having a better attitude, being more competent, stuff like that.
Okay. Which do I think is better, or...?
Well, no. Okay, so you know the debate of people should just be who they are and people should just accept it.
Hmm.
Accept somebody for who they are. I'm of the mindset that I don't really care. If I want to associate with you, I will. If I don't, I don't. But the... Hey, Sparky Fister's in.
Hey.
How do I explain it? I always have trouble explaining this. But when people say, you know, let someone be who they are, versus making them a better person in order to associate or accept them.
Tolerate their character flaws.
Yes.
Right.
So... Honestly, I don't know what people are expecting with that.
That's a very interesting question. I suppose it depends on the person and what their potential is. Because I come from quite a low-class background in general. I mean, the thing with military life is you get to... You know, I went to school with officers' sons and privates' sons, and my dad was a sergeant. So I was reasonably between the two, so I could associate with either without... And I'm not suggesting there was a massive stigma or anything, but there was definitely a slight distinction. They, you know... And I think it was more because they lived near each other. I don't think it was necessarily a class thing. You had the officers' quarters on... RAF camps were quite large, and they were all situated in an area. I mean, it wasn't closed off from anywhere else or anything. You know, I went to plenty of officers' sons' houses. But because they all lived near each other, they could easily hang out with each other after school. So, you know, they became better friends than the privates' sons, who all, again, lived in the same sort of areas. But, you know, and so I think that was very much the thing. And so I tended to hang out with sergeant's sons, you know, the sort of middling ranks. And it did kind of... I forgot where I was going with this again.
Don't worry, I'm having the same problem.
Yeah. Great. So
yeah, the show's fucked, people.
So yeah, sorry, I've got it. So I've never... I don't like to judge people by my standards necessarily. I like to judge them by the standards of their own standards that I can see in themselves. Because, like with my friend Dan, who got this feminist pregnant, right? He is capable of being better than he is. Whereas a lot of the people that he associates with aren't necessarily capable of being better than they are due to circumstances of birth, you know? They were born to a poor household, broken family, single mother, poor education. They're not going very far, and they're not... You know, it would take a hell of a lot of work for them to change. I mean, like, a hell of a lot, I think. And I think that maybe it would be beyond them, you know, because I think everyone has got this habit of assuming that everyone else is exactly as intelligent as you are, which is is one of the things actually I argue in favor of conspiracy. It's like, you know, you might have to consider that these people are actually smarter than you are. So, you know, that could be a consequence of you saying, well, no, that can't be true, you know, because you think it would be too scary to be true. But they might be thinking, well, they will think it's too scary to be true, and so we can get away with it, you know. So, yeah, and conversely, I've met people who, you know, are very nice people, absolutely lovely people, but aren't ever going to be rocket scientists, you know.
Right.
And so some people, I think, definitely don't live up to their potential, you know, and I'm probably one of these people. But I think there are some people with which getting along in life as they are is the potential, is them realizing their potential, you know? So, yeah, on a case-by-case basis, I think that people should be encouraged to improve. But I think it should also be remembered that for some people, getting to where they are is the improvement.
Right, right.
It's probably a bit of a weird answer.
Nah, that's the best one I've heard so far, so.
Yeah? Hmm. Yeah, I'll remember that. I'll ask other people that in future, because, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if it's a negative character trait, like something like they're a gambler or something, then obviously you've got to be like, come on, get over that sort of thing. You know, you've got it, haven't you?
Yeah. All right, so here's one. And this is one I actually called out a feminist on. They could not list me one show that went against it. Where is the media oppressing women? Because I don't know about you, but I hear it constantly. The media portrays women as blankety blank and so on and so forth, as lesser beings and should be subservient to men and whatnot. And I'm just thinking, where? Where is this happening? Because, I mean, as far back as I can remember, you ever heard of a show called Johnny Bravo?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. He was the chauvinist pig of the show, right?
Yeah.
But we all loved him because he was hilarious. I mean, every woman who he tried to pull that with ended up, you know, hitting him, beating him down, smacking him in the face. Is that not one of the biggest feminist, like, hoorah, I just had an orgasm shows that could ever have come to be?
Absolutely. It's a magnificent indicator of how women are considered in society. You know, Johnny Bravo being like the sleazy pickup artist, and he just gets rebuffed violently a lot of the time at every turn. It never pans out. So, you know, that should tell you quite a lot you need to know about the position of women in society.
Yeah, but the thing is, this show was around like in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, how many shows have you seen where it advocates women getting back in the kitchen?
Yeah, exactly. That's an argument I've made with feminists as well. And I was going to say, like all things fishy, as you just said, it's happening in the 50s, and I think that is very much, you know, that's what their problem is. Feminists make all of these sort of ad hoc, crass generalizations about the media and all this sort of thing as if it was about 70 years ago. You know, it's all bollocks. They talk as if, you know, feminism never actually happened in the 60s and 70s. You know, they talk about, like, they didn't achieve anything. And they did back then. You know, they were genuine achievements.
I'm
baffled. You know, what do you think we're living in right now, you idiots? This is the feminist paradise, I would have thought.
Yeah, and when I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about all the shows that were on during like the 90s and 2000s, and I can't think of one that advocated treating women as lessers or putting them back in the kitchen. I can't think of one. I mean,
maybe Married with Children at best. I mean, it wasn't really the theme of the show, but
yeah, maybe. I mean, most of those shows, actually. If it wasn't dealing with the matter at all, most of those shows were all about that strong female character. They were all about the independent female, the ones who were doing it themselves, being the better person. I mean, they had to reduce men to stupid monkeys in order to do it. What does that tell you? But, I mean, I cannot think of a show, or anything for that matter, in the last 20 years that has degraded women in any way, shape, or form, or oppressed them. I've got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the closest I can come is Married with Children, but even then, like, Peggy wasn't oppressed, you know, she was, it was very obvious that he was kind of oppressed by her constant demands, you know, and I think that's why the show went on for so long and was so popular, because I think it really, like, resonated with house husbands, you know, where you know, the constant thing. And one of the things I actually really liked about the show is there's this one where Peggy gets a job and she hates it and she can't wait to go back into the home life. And I was thinking, I bet that is so many women. You know, I've met women like that in my real life who are just like, I hate working. You know, and it's like, well, you can thank the feminists.
But yeah, you can't say it out loud. You can't let people know what these what women like that are thinking. No, that's not politically correct. That's not empowering. Now, sitting there and saying that men shouldn't rape and that women are not responsible, that's empowering. Women having agent, not having agency in a situation, that's empowering.
Yeah, wasn't it? I think it was Angry Aussie's video where it was like, you know, women can't do anything about this. And it's like, oh, that's very empowering. You know, I'm certain you're a feminist now.
Right?
It's unbelievable.
and you know, I just, whenever I call them out on it, I don't see it. I mean, there was two guys in here that pointed out, you know, Family Guy and American Dad. American Dad, I can understand, but Family Guy, Lois is the voice of reason most of the time. She's the one who nags. She's the one who gets stuff done. Because Peter, he's just a complete fuckwit. He's the idiot. He's a lovable idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the lovable idiot is a great. And the same with Homer Simpson. You know, I love both of those characters because I've known guys like them, but they're always the minority of guys that I know. You know, most of the guys that I know are quite responsible, intelligent, thinking adults.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, where is your oppression? Where is it? I would like to see this.
They have no idea what oppression actually is. That's the thing. I really don't think they actually know what oppression actually is.
Exactly. And it's just like, okay, now I swear, if you want to see oppression, I'll go get my patriarchal stick of oppression and put you in the oppressive coal mines in the patriarchal country of patriarch, and you'll see oppression.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that they're so free to talk about how oppressed they are is proof that they're not fucking oppressed. Because the last thing that an oppressive class wants is to have the peasants or their oppressed group or whatever all talking about how oppressed they are, because they might fucking do something about it. You know? Just the fact that these are public conversations on national, international media with millions of people seeing it and going, oh, women are oppressed. Oh, that's terrible. I better do something about this. You know, it's insane.
Yeah. And it's just, I can't see where they're oppressed. I mean, like, okay, so you've got this dichotomy of women exposing themselves and their bodies is empowering on one hand, but then it's objectifying on the other because men like it. So is that it? Is it, if it's that men like it, is that what makes it oppressive?
I honestly think that might be the very fundamental, like, cornerstone which the whole thing rests on. Because everything seems fine as long as it's for a woman, but as soon as it seems that a man's gaining anything positive out of it, then it's bad, you know. And like you say, the stripping is exactly it. The amount of like strip club exercise things with fat strippers, and there are all these women, you know, yelling, "Oh, how brave and empowered they are!" And it's just like, you know, that's not for men. You know, no men are like saying, "Oh, I wish I could see the world's fattest stripper pole dancing. That would be amazing. I'd pay for that."
Well, everyone's got that little bit of, you know, that fetish. Not me, but
society wide.
Everyone has their kink. Not gonna judge.
But then, you know, they're not fat strip clubs all over the land, you know, whereas there are normal strip clubs. So, I think it's very evident that it is very much, if it's something a man's enjoying, then it's a bad thing. Unless women can get in there and change it, which, like video games now, just, you know.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if oppression to them is just what men like that women do.
Hmm.
I mean, if a woman likes cooking, then she's empowered. But if she suddenly serves meal to a man, is she oppressed? Well, no, I mean, let's follow the...
I think you're right. That's what I'm smiling at. It's just... No, I do actually think you're absolutely correct here. It's when a man derives anything positive from it, then suddenly he's oppressing her. You know? But yeah, go on, sorry.
And, well... Yeah, I mean, once where's the line when it becomes empowering versus when it becomes oppressive? Because those are like polar opposites. Can you do the same thing and yet it both be empowering and oppressive at the same time? Because, I mean, you've got these people who see Victoria's Secret models, you know, modeling the clothes where they're half naked. And some women call that empowering because, you know, her body, she's showing it. She's a strong woman. And then you've got another person who's like, she's parading herself around like a piece of meat for these men to enjoy. I know they're trying to sell clothes to women, but damn it, men are enjoying it. Therefore, oppressive.
I think that's why the fashion industry ended up getting size zero models. Because you look at them, they've got the body of a 10-year-old boy, and you know that men aren't enjoying that. You know, they've got nothing. They're just rakes. And it's just, you know, there are no tits, no ass, no curvy hips, no... And they're there with really sullen looks on their face and say, oh, yeah, I'm loving this. You know, and I think that's definitely one of the reasons. But, yeah.
Go ahead. But yeah, I want to know where exactly that line is for these people. And you know, if I ever wanted to start an infighting between feminists, I would just put a meme on there that says empowered because she's doing what she wants to, oppressed because she's showing off her body for people who might find it sexually appealing.
I do think it really is the second a man takes interest and enjoys it. I really do think that. I think that's the line, you know, where like my right to punch ends where the other guy's nose begins.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. You know, I'm empowered right up until I hit the man's nose and he starts enjoying it. You know?
Oh, that felt good.
No. You're oppressing me.
Yeah, he liked it. My fist was oppressed right there. No, that's a way to look at it.
I think that's exactly what it is with feminists. Cause
I think I was raped.
I've seen exactly the same thing where it's just feminists in comment sections arguing over how empowering, say, the 50 Shades of Grey thing. Oh, my God. I saw a bunch of stuff on feminist websites of, you know, can you be a feminist and enjoy 50 Shades of Grey? And the gamut of mutually contradictory and yet equally supported arguments, I use that in air quotes, from these feminists about why you either can be a feminist and enjoy 50 Shades of Grey, or you can't be a feminist and enjoy 50 Shades of Grey, all based on the same specious reasoning that, you know, it's fundamentally whether you're enjoying it and there's not a man enjoying it effectively. But, and then to go on to say that 50 Shades of Grey isn't really BDSM, not that I know, but, I mean, I don't know. Is a woman getting bound in leather and fucked by some guy BDSM? It kind of sounds like it to me. You know?
Yeah, man.
No, I don't know. But that's the thing. I think Razorblade Candy is right when he says the cult of me.
The cult of me? I don't think I saw that. All right.
I've seen him call it the cult of me. And, you know, like, oh, I deserve this. I deserve that. I'm empowered.
The entitlement thing.
Yeah, because it is incredibly entitled, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is.
Yeah. So, yeah. It worries me how much power they're getting, though. You know, it worries me that in King's College London there's a professor of education and social justice. I'm not making that up.
Okay, repeat that.
In King's College London, there is a position called the Professor of Education and Social Justice.
No. No, not, I'm not listening to them. No. Stop. It hurts.
I'm not making that up, though.
It hurts.
That's the thing. These people are literally in charge of academia these days. They've got positions made specifically for their ideology. You know, how can you not be in charge of it if you're getting that? You don't have a position of communism in an American university, do you? You know?
And you're sure this isn't a story from The Onion? Or from The Oatmeal?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I actually went to the King's College London website to have a look at her bio. I think I've got it saved somewhere. I'm going to be putting it in a video at some point because it's just... Honestly, I'm not. And that's the thing. I'm actually thinking, okay, well, maybe I should investigate more universities and see how many of these they have. you know, just to see how deep the rot has set.
Yeah, because honestly, that is... Wow, that is... That's outstanding. That's amazing. That is... Social... What would the... Well, obviously social sciences, but what do you teach in that? What do you say?
Ideological brainwashing. It must be. It must be, you know, patriarchy, cis white men, blah, blah, blah. You know, it must be all that.
Must be. I'm trying to imagine that class. Oh,
Good
God.
Has done a good series on it. Seriously, no, he really has.
Okay, so there was this video I saw of this white woman, this older white woman. She came into this, I think it was like a gender studies or some kind of class like that, and she's going on about how blacks are oppressed still and how they can't walk out of racism and all that whatnot. And she was getting on this one girl who was sitting there with her arms crossed, and if you questioned her, then you pretty much a racist, and you didn't, like, I'd have to show you the video, but it was, I swear to God, it was like she was talking to, like, Ku Klux Klan members from back in the 1950s. The way she was talking was as militant as she was, I shit not. It was like she was talking to Ku Klux Klan members. I'm like, what the fuck, lady? Calm down. These people are on your side, I promise. I mean, it takes a lot to make me feel bad for college, obviously, FJW, college kid. It takes a lot, but it did happen that day.
Jesus Christ. this is the sort of thing that worries me when Razorblade Candy then talks about ideological purification, because I'm thinking, oh no, ideologies, you know, they're just a bad thing. You know, it's all rules and things that you can't now do, and oh my God. It's all work.
Yeah, and then you got like division and trying to hold everyone up to your standard. And don't get me wrong, I've got a standard I hold everybody up to for myself, but it's just non-aggression. It's just not, you know, hurting people.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I mean, don't be an asshole. Don't go around kicking puppies. Aside from that, hey, do what you want. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the festivities. Get your dick wet. You know, all that great stuff. Just don't hurt anybody. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. One of my things is if everyone just left each other the fuck alone, we'd have a much happier world. You know, and all it would do is just not getting in someone else's face. You know, you don't. It's being lazy as a path to peace, and harmony. Exactly.
Harby 87. You missed it. We did that in the beginning.
Yeah. We're waiting to see where he goes with it, because he's gonna do a series, isn't he? So.
Yeah, well, I'm actually still very interested to see that. It's going to be...
Absolutely.
I'm not sure I'm going to like it, but I am interested to see it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things that... one of the things that I find a lot of people kind of have trouble understanding is... there's this quote from Aristotle. It's the mark of an educated mind to entertain a concept without accepting it. And
yeah.
I do this all the time, and I'm not trying to blow my own home, but... Like when, like I made this one a video about how to about women feminists trying to change the criminal justice system, and how it was so unfair to women. And I argued within the paradigm of the current criminal justice system. And everyone was like, "Oh, you're wrong on these bits," because, and I'm just like, "Well, actually, I do agree with that, but I was leaving that out, you know, that perspective out of this video just because it wasn't really relevant, you know." And I find a lot of people kind of assume a lot, but maybe that's just the nature of watching one video and, like, you know, commenting on that or something.
And yeah, I agree with that, but a lot of people, they want this this idea of you have to close every single loophole along with the argument, to the point where you're talking about a completely different subject because you're just continually closing these loopholes, and if you don't close them all the way, they're just going to think on that one thing you didn't say and try and hold on to it until they can work it back in.
Yeah, and I do find that often a lot of these arguments effectively get semantic in some kind of way. And that really bothers me, because, like you say, you end up missing the point of the argument, and the division comes from something secondary to the actual point. You know, and so, you know, the argument, even if you could just both agree to disagree, then you could probably go back to the original point, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to stay on track with people who blatantly are there not to listen, but to fight you. Unless you have some kind of setup where there are boundaries and you can, you know, have a healthy debate with it, there are people out there who will intentionally just pick and pick and pick until you're just like, fuck it, I give up. So yeah. I've gotten to the point where I'm just like, are you here to listen or are you here to debate?
Are you talking about the academia thing here?
No, I knew what I was going for in that.
I'm just teasing.
Decision on my part. No, it was a stupid decision on my part, but I knew what I was going for in that. I should have, but I went in with the concept, with trying to understand, when it should have just been in slinging mud, since I decided to waste my time with it anyway. I mean, it was a mudslinging competition. I just tried to make it something else. It was a stupid decision.
Well, I don't know if it's stupid. I think I wouldn't say stupid, because I think it was an important thing that had to be done. Because I really think that I've seen a lot of people in the sort of, I'm hesitant to use the word community, but there does seem to be some sort of community coalescing of like-minded sort of content producers and the people who I regularly see the same people's comments on those videos, you know. And you know, who comment on my videos. So I know that they're watching them, and it seems to be a collection of like-minded people.
Yeah.
And it's nice, it's good to make sure that there's a clear distinction between us and them, because he's a cultist, you know, using force of personality to achieve what he's achieved so far. So, and I really don't think that the people on this side of the fence are like that, you know, I really don't. And so I like to make sure that there's a clear distinction there. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
I guess, but it was an all-around just, I mean, it may not have been a bad thing, but it was something that I could have gone without.
Yeah, and, you know, but maybe a bit of wounded pride. And
yeah, I suppose you're right. But yeah, I mean, there's a difference between trying to actually have a healthy debate with somebody where you're trying to construct and explore, and then there's just, you know, FS debates like that.
Yeah, absolutely. He was just there for the fight, you know.
Yeah.
And he's a good fighter. Good.
Oh, he was fantastic at fighting, but hearing points and intellectual honesty, I question heavily.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I was trying to get to, actually. That was exactly the point. Exactly.
But aside from that,
do you mind if I grab coffee quickly? Because I wasn't actually prepared for a long chat with anyone, and my mouth is absolutely dry.
By all means.
Yeah, do you want to answer some questions in the comments or something?
Sure.
Cool, I'm back.
Questions? Anyone? I completely forgot about the 45-second lag. Redefinition of the word normal. Normal people are just people you don't know very well. Who am I? Or who are you? I need time to think about that. Do I like teapots? All right. Earl Grey. Definitely Earl Grey. Is there anything feminists get right? I know there might be a bit of a controversy in me saying this, but I do believe that women do have the capability to be on the same level as men, and I believe that they should be given the ability, and by that I mean men should step back and let them you know, face the consequences of their decisions so that they can mature in the way that they need to. Would I hit it big red? No. No, I cut it off first. What was the debate? Manhood Academy. Yeah. Sexual objectification. If they're sexual and people like it, good. And well, it's none of their business if they're being, if other people are gaining pleasure through their desires and voluntary means of sexual objectification. As long as they're doing it willingly, I don't give a fuck. Do I like working for the petroleum industry? Eh, it's all right. I like it. Women spreading their legs on trains to fight male privilege. The spreading their legs on trades thing, I've read a little bit about it, but good for them. Have fun. Yeah, it's stupid, but whatever. The Otherkin movement, I do not know what that is. The pains of people who don't identify as male or female. The people who don't identify. If you've got a dick, you're a guy. If you've got a vagina, you're a girl. If you have neither, you're an it. If you get them changed over, then you can be whatever you want to be. Until such time, you've got a dick, you're a guy. Got a badge, you're a girl. Sorry. Well, I haven't been making videos. I've been gone for 5 weeks over in the oil fields. So, yeah. Combat feminism, honesty and truth. That's the only one. When it comes to feminism, you have to acknowledge what's occurred and you have to acknowledge what has been accomplished and say, okay, this is done. If you want more, then you need to say so. But you can't keep flipping, you can't keep moving the goalpost. Canadian Insanity, I have not seen that. Do I think forced gender equality is the end goal of gender egalitarianism? For some, yes. For others, no. As far as I'm concerned, as long as you're not being, you know, hurting people or whatever, it's gender equality. As long as you're letting people do what they want to, aside from that, then yeah, I think there is an issue. But forced gender equality, that cannot happen and have real equality. Choice and freedom are what humans strive for. That's what makes us feel like we have power within our lives. And if you try to take that choice and force away from us via force, then you're just creating a different kind of resentment for people. All right? If rape is the worst crime possible, even worse than murder, should rape victims be shot to improve their lot? I believe anybody who has disregard for a human being's autonomy should be punished severely, especially to the point where it goes to rape. Now, do I think rape is worse than murder? That would depend, because, I mean, murder, you're dead. Your life is ended. You've got no farther chances. With rape, you can still go on. But is it worse to live with that kind of trauma than to just die? So I'm not really sure. Hot sauce, don't like hot sauce. Don't know what a headmate is. Ferguson, I like him.
Have you not been keeping up the Tumblr?
I have not. Yes, I work in the oil industry. Long hours is how it's been. Is peak oil real? I do not know. I have not researched that. Global poverty and end goal for fake egalitarianism is global poverty and independence. I don't know. YouTube name again so I can follow you. Psychological Cynic. Who's my favorite feminist? Is that... Are you trying to make me mad?
No, go on. Who's your favorite?
I'd have to go with Big Red, just because she is entertaining as hell. And tits or ass, I'm going to have to go with tits. All right. Questions have ended. He has returned. And now it's my turn to go get something to drink.
Okay. Well, I'll go over some of your questions if you want, and if you want to ask more, be my guest. My favorite feminist is probably Anita Sarkeesian, actually. She's fit. I like tits and ass quite equally. What other questions can I answer? Rape isn't the worst crime possible. But if it was, then no, obviously no one should be shot just because they're a victim of a rape. But I think that so few rape victims commit suicide that being dead can't possibly be better than having been raped. Not that any one of those is good, but, you know, otherwise they'd commit suicide because that'd be preferable to living in a post-rape world for them, wouldn't it? Do I think forced gender equality is the end goal of gender egalitarianism? Well, I suppose if gender egalitarianism is not feminism, No, I wouldn't have thought so at all. I would have thought that it was freedom of opportunity, freedom of choice. One of the things I hate most about feminism is that they've got this predetermined statistical number that they've got in their minds. Louis, I'll do my my video on Putin soon. I'm going to try and make it a fairly fair analysis, though. I'm not. I respect Putin for what he's achieved. I know you were, all things fishy, I know you were. I didn't think that you were really serious. It was a hypothetical question, obviously. But yeah, the thing on Putin is he's achieved a lot of good for Russia. And he's achieved a lot of good for Putin as well, obviously. But, you know, you can really hardly blame him for that. I mean, who wouldn't try and achieve the best they could for themselves as well? You know, I mean, I don't expect him to be a pauper or anything, walking the streets in sackcloth and ashes or something. You know, I would expect him to be quite wealthy. And I'm aware that he may well have seized some companies and made himself filthy rich. But again, it doesn't really change the positive outcomes of what he's done. So, there we go. And he's so fun. Isn't he just the funniest guy? You know, he just looks like he could kill everyone around him, but doesn't because he's polite. I'm for Scottish independence, so Goodfella has to pay to cross the border. if you asked your average English person, they'd probably be very pro-Scottish independence. They did a poll here, and it was something like 63% were in favour of it in England. Which is, I assume, why they're not letting the English have a say in whether Scotland goes independent or not. Or at least one of the reasons. Now, I don't know. I don't see the point, necessarily. I mean, they've got pretty much as much devolution as they could want. I mean, what's really going to change when Scotland's independent, except for it'll be a piece of paper that says, we're an independent country. You know, nothing's really going to change for your average Scot.
All right, I'm back.
Have you got a view on Scottish independence?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, from the United Kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, if there has to be government, smaller government, the better. The less of tiers you have to go through, the better. So yeah, if the Scots want to have their own country and independence from the UK, then I'm all for it.
That's interesting. I think that we should give Scotland their independence, then wage war on them. Scotland's only got about 8 million people in it, so London could probably defeat Scotland in a war. So without the rest of the UK intervening, so
yeah,
you know, occupy, enslave, and then they can really be like those English bastards, you know. Oh, they can really give them a reason to call us oppressors and stuff, you know. Show them who's boss.
Now, all that I don't know about, so I'm not going to talk too much.
I'm joking. I've heard various different accounts, actually, of English people in Scotland and how some of them have found it wildly racist against the English. But when I went there, I found all the Scottish people around me were really nice, and, you know, they were just... No one ever mentioned that I was English, and I think I'm pretty English-sounding, so I think they would have known.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I guess different places in Scotland have got different opinions on it.
That's hilarious. Okay, here's your independence. Now prepare to be invaded.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think, you know. Show him his boss. Also, it's the fate of all newly independent nations, is to fight a war for external control from someone else, generally.
You know, well, yeah, we all went through it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if England did. Did England?
Well, no, not really. The only time England was ever conquered was by the Normans in 1066. And that was really only because William the Conqueror was the last person with a claim left standing. So it was very different back then. So it wasn't like, you know, the German occupation of France. It was, you know, it affected a very small area of southern England. And then it was the north that kind of rose in revolt, and then they really suffered the brunt of it. But the power centres in the south really weren't that bothered. I mean, you got a claimed king in London, so after that Hastings, I mean, they must have been all right with it.
Hmm.
All right. I don't know why I'm talking about this now. I'm just kind of waffling.
Well, no, I was always wondering that, because you're right. Whenever a country does pop up, there's always people trying to invade and conquer it. I was always wondering if England had that problem, or yeah, England.
I actually had to have a conversation with my dad last weekend when I saw him about. He was under the impression that the English had always been in England, and I was trying to tell him that no, we were actually the conquerors of Roman Britannia. You know, it wasn't the, you know, the English started in Germany, and then they came over, took here, and then the aristocracy changed, but for your average Englishman, not much changed. There were changes, actually. There were some changes. Like, before the Normans arrived, you could hunt wherever, and then when the Normans arrived, they kind of privatized the forests, so you couldn't go hunting in the forests, and you know, you couldn't eat swans anymore and stuff like that. So it would have probably been quite oppressive, actually, which would explain that there was quite a resistance. But the reason, like in history, it seems that England's conquered overnight is because the only person who was entitled to be the king was William the Conqueror at the end of it. So, yeah, not really. It's England's never really been, like... I mean, and that was 1,000 years ago. So, yeah, not really much in the way of overthrowing governments, and I mean, it's all come from within rather than from without, you know.
Well, all things considered, that's really not the worst.
No, it's been lucky, to be honest. It's geography, though. It's all geography, you know. This is something that whenever I hear about like American exceptionalism, I you know, anyone else would be the same in your position, you know, the American position sort of thing. I'm not saying that you're an American exceptionalist or anything.
No, I'm furthest from it, actually.
Yeah, I thought you probably would be, actually. I can tell from your videos you're a much more pragmatist, you know, about these things, you know. That's the thing. It's all geography. If you look at everything, like, the reason Europe became successful in, you know, in the sort of Enlightenment era is really just because of demographics. It's just about different competing people and the density of population, which is why, like, sub-Saharan Africa never really... there were some great civilizations, but they were very influenced by the Muslims, and they were Islamic. But below, it was all tribal because it was just a large area with very few people per square mile. And so innovation is driven by population.
Necessity.
Effectively, you know, the more people you have, the more problems you have, you know. And,
right.
And a lot of human history is devoted to solving those problems. And then the classic example is like Europe and China, because Europe and China should have been very similar, but China was unified very early in its history, and it wasn't always unified. But, and I'm not any great expert on the history of China, but I'm aware that there are periods where there weren't, like, you know, it wasn't a hegemonic empire, but that was always a temporary state of affairs, because after it happens the first time, it becomes kind of the sort of thing to aspire to.
You know, right.
Which is why,
right.
I mean, through the Middle Ages, the Germans kept going on about how they were the Roman Empire, and everyone was just like, no, you're not. You're the German Empire. But, you know, and one of the things in Europe is that there were lots of lots of people of similar rank in relatively close proximity to each other, like monarchs. And that meant that no one really got too much of a cultural edge on anyone else. And if you compare like the Chinese to like the Mongols, the Chinese are so much more sophisticated.
By comparison, obviously.
And in Europe, and that was because, you know, China was a giant, you know, not homogenous, but unified state. And they could advance where the ruler wanted to advance, you know, where it was given patronage. Whereas in Europe, you had lots of people who may not have individually been able to give so much patronage to one cause or, you know, interest. But you had lots who had lots of competing interests. And then there were wars all the time. You know, it was inevitable that military technology was just going to advance and advance and advance, you know.
And I'm sorry, I have to address this. China had the biggest weapon at their disposal. Way back then, they had fireworks.
I don't think they actually used fireworks as a weapon.
But they should have. That would have been
the
greatest weapon.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They would have done if China had been like Europe. Because someone small would have been like, actually, I could make, you know, a small country. Someone in there would have figured out that you could put, you know, this in a tube and a ball at the end and then fire it and it'll kill someone through armor. And they would have used it. But because, the state putting down revolts rather than competing states trying to gain territory and power off each other, they didn't need to.
Right. But, were the Mongols, I don't think the Mongols were that familiar with fireworks back in that day, right?
I've probably known about them.
Because, I mean, just seeing that would send anyone running who didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would have known about them remotely. I mean, I think there may have been legends, you know, about this terrible weapon. But that might have even been worse, because then they're expecting, you know, they've heard these terrible legends about this terrible explosive weapon. It's, oh my god, that's so weird. And then, you know, when they actually see it, it's probably more impressive than they imagine it, because what are they imagining? You know, they've not seen anything like it. So to see it probably was, you know, a lot more. So yeah, I think it probably did have much more of a psychological effect than, you know, than it needed to have. You know, than it did have, like, practical battlefield impact.
Right, right.
So, yeah. And, yeah, and that probably would have helped defend China's borders, without a doubt.
Yeah, and,
Sorry, go on.
I don't know. Does anyone know if the Chinese did use those rockets or fireworks as weapons against the Mongols? I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, no, I think they might have done, actually. I think I was wrong. I think they actually might have done. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing a picture of like a 6 or 8-barreled sort of rocket launcher. But one of these things is how much damage would that really have done? You know,
I don't know. I really don't know.
It probably would have killed the people it hit, but, you know, I can't imagine they were very accurate. And I can't imagine that they were particularly explosive or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I think the battlefield impact would have been primarily psychological. But all things fishy said they had cannons and flamethrowers, so Jesus Christ. But flamethrowers aren't that unusual, actually. The Greeks had flamethrowers.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Shit. Fuck, there was one other topic I was wanting to talk about. Okay, so this hashtag, I don't need feminism or women against feminism.
Yeah.
What is this? I've heard of it, I've looked a little into it, and I've seen some guys, you know, in full support of it, talking about how it's going to be the main charge against feminism. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm aware of the MGTOW orthodoxy on it that Baba and Stardust have said. I think they've got the same position on it, which was something along the lines of, this was something he predicted. It's inevitable, and it's no less gynocratic. And I suppose that he's probably right in that way. It probably is still very gynocratic. And I'm not in favor of any kind of genderocracy. So I am naturally against that. But I think they don't know they're arguing for something that's gynocratic. And so I don't think they're trying to make it any kind of female superiority. You know, I don't think that's what they're going for. I think they're just really against the sort of in-your-face aspects of feminism, because they've got in their face. So, I mean, I think Barbarossa might be right.
Well, okay, so...
In consequence, you know, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, any intent he may have ascribed to them, and he might not have ascribed any, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I don't think he's necessarily right in that.
All right, because one of the one of the pictures I saw was, I don't need feminism because I'm okay being a housewife.
Hmm.
And it was, as he predicted, that it would be a return to traditional values was the reason women would say, we don't need feminism. And I don't know, I would imagine that his prediction that a lot of men would fall for this would be right as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen a lot of that?
I haven't seen a lot of it. Just DC5409 just pointed out it's gynocentric that I meant, and it's on the Harvey says it's here. That is what I meant, sorry. My mistake there. I think that's the natural order. You know, I really do. I think the natural order is for the man to, you know, I think for people to get married is completely natural. You know, I think if history has proven nothing else, as humans are a monogamous species, you know, there are so few societies in comparison to the number of societies that have existed that were, you know, not monogamous in some way. So it really doesn't work when you start getting larger societies as well. It all kind of falls apart there, I think. I'm sorry, I'm just getting myself coming back through your speakers or something. Cut me off.
I don't know if I would say it's the natural order. I mean, in civilization. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I think that the happiest relationships I've seen and observed amongst my friends and family have been the ones where I think there's very definitely, I'm not necessarily saying it has to be gendered, but I very definitely think that husband and wife are two specifically purposed roles, and men tend to prefer to be the husband and women prefer to be the wife on average.
Right.
And so, and I think that these are gender roles, and I think they've been constructed because of the natural inclinations of men and women. Men will naturally gravitate to other things, different things to women than women do. And so these gender roles, I think, are very well formed around those ideas, I think. They're to fill those needs and achieve a collective goal of raising a family successfully.
Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right on that, because, I mean, if you look throughout history, the typical pair bonding has been the norm, either that or some kind of polygamy. Some places, polyandry, whatever
polyandry
it is. Polyandry, there we go.
Yeah.
But that's for civilization, from what I've seen. But if we look at it from the purely evolutionary perspective, from like pre-days of civilization, then it was alpha male fucks everything, maybe beta male gets his dick in there somewhere, and everyone provides for the collective in terms of food, water, and so on and so forth.
I'm not sure that that's really applicable to humans, though. I think that's more an animal kingdom sort of thing, with like the lions and the pride, you know. I think that humans have generally been, even tribally, I think they are monogamous. I've seen various like documentaries about, you know, hardly contacted tribes, and they do seem to have some sort of, I think the pair bonding thing is really, you know, I think the alpha male in the tribe gets the best woman, you know, and maybe gets a couple of best women, but the other men get their own women, you know, and I think that's a fairly sovereign arrangement, I think. I might be wrong, but I think that's how, that was how it was working. I wasn't really looking for it at the time, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not saying you're wrong on that account, because that is something I do agree with, but this concept of one man, one woman, that kind of monogamy is a relatively new concept. And when I say relatively new, I mean Homo sapiens, we've been around for the better part of 200,000 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of pair bonding, I'd say, is 50,000, maybe? I'm talking out of my ass on that one, but...
I know what you mean. even if the number's wrong, it doesn't change the statement so much. I think ideally in nature, I do think that long-term monogamous bonds were beneficial to the human species. And I think that humans probably did have that. No, I mean, even if it didn't always happen, that was probably something they were ultimately aiming for. Because, I mean, I can't get over women's addiction to marriage. I can't get over it. It's so baffling to, like, to feminists, it's baffling. You know, they keep missing the fact that women want to get married because they want long-term stability and a guarantee that after their fertile years have gone, they've got someone to look after them when they're old, you know?
And I have to question that. Is it really because of this thing called quote-unquote love, or is it because of the financial security aspect? I guess we are talking about monogamy, so I guess I can't really conflate monogamy with love and, you know, honor and cherish and so on and so forth. So I guess in that aspect I have to step down, but I think it's less about the love and the compassion and the companionship so much as it is financial security and having someone to take care of them into old age.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot to be said for love. I mean, you know, I obviously it's all chemicals in the brain, but it's for an evolutionary purpose, isn't it? You know, it's everything has happened for an evolutionary purpose, and so there must have been some benefit to create whatever the chemical state of love is between two people. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened, would it?
Right. And the great Indoors 1979 just asked a question that I think would be a good topic. Isn't monogamy damaging from an evolutionary standpoint? Now, speaking genetically, yes. I do believe it would be because a woman wouldn't have sex with a person who would appeal to her hypergamy, and therefore she would settle for the genes that she's already getting from her partner. But from a moral perspective, if you can call it moral evolution, would it be okay? Sorry?
I think you can. I think that there's definitely been a moral evolution. And I think that a lot of morality is specifically based on evolutionary principles. But sorry, please carry on.
So from a genetic standpoint, yeah, I think it would be, but is that what we as a sapient species, a species that wants to strive for, I guess, happiness and advancement and all these great things, do we really want to focus on genetic supremacy, or do we want to focus on what will make us happy and trying to evolve ourselves and trying to control ourselves so we evolve to what makes us so we can feel happy to be alive instead of trying to just make the best generation that comes after us?
I suppose... I mean... If the purpose is just to continue and propagate the species, then I think monogamy in humans works very well. And I think that the number of humans around is testament to that. I mean, it makes sense if you don't have very large litters to make sure that there is a strong protector available to make sure that the few children you have survive to adulthood so they can themselves reproduce, especially if pre-modern medicine, a lot of them died. So it definitely makes sense to have a very strong vested interest from a father.
Yeah.
And so it would also make sense from an evolutionary perspective to give him that vested interest by, you know, being very attached to their mother, because the mother and children, she, you know, you don't want a human child just wandering around while you're fighting. You know, you want someone taking the child somewhere safe while you try and defeat whatever, or try and protect from whatever is currently threatening your family. So I think, you know, there would definitely have been strong advantages to having this as a unit, and it works in quite small situations and quite large situations. So, you know, if you've got a very large society, it's the same principle works on both scales.
Right. And I'm going to have to address one of the commenters, the Serenade guy. His complaint is that I'm talking about genetics. Mm-hmm. What would make a man, what would just destroy a man, would find out that his son is not his? That would not make him happy. Am I wrong?
I think that, did you see that thing on the MGTOW page on Facebook?
Which one?
There's a MGTOW page on Facebook that I like, and they posted something from like the Toronto Sun or something, where this guy finds out that three of his four children aren't his in court, and the court still makes him pay for them. And it was just like, I can't imagine how heartbroken that guy must be. I just...
Yeah, and that's that's my point. I mean, if you want happiness, well, for most guys, I mean, you got those people who are for open relationships and are okay with taking care of someone else's kid with knowledge, then, you know, monogamy and absolute monogamy, no people going outside of it, then yeah, I would consider that a successful relationship. But if you want genetic supremacy, then have the best couples, regardless of if they're in a committed relationship or if they want to be with one particular person to the end of their days, let them breed with the finer specimens. But would that bring happiness, or would that bring genetic supremacy? Or not genetic supremacy, but, yeah.
Superiority, maybe.
Genetic superiority. I mean, we've had it both ways so far with, you know, the higher-end women mating with the higher-end man, getting his seed, but then going back to the beta man who will take care of her. That's the system we've had for quite some time. Now, would it be prudent, I guess would be the word, to go full-on monogamous, but, you know, harm genetic supremacy?
I suppose from that point of view, if you consider the... I mean, the guys that women sleep around with in their 20s are always good-looking, so they're probably raising a generation of good-looking people, better-looking people, than if they had been, like, in, like, you know, 1900 or something, where you got married at 16 or 18 or something, and then you were with your husband for life. I mean, obviously cheating still occurred, but, you know, I imagine it was a lot... I just imagine there were a lot less bastard children back then than there are now. So, yeah, I suppose you end up with better-looking children, but that's...
Right, and I don't know if you've heard of... never mind, I'm not going to bring that up, but... His philosophy is that if you stay within a happy home, if children stay within a happy home, then they will be better off. And even genetically speaking... happier children who accomplish more, who have a drive, basically taking our sentience into account, would make more appealing partners than, you know, that big tough guy, but who always just doesn't do anything because some kind of psychological blocks. You know, he doesn't like loud things because his father, you know, shot guns by his head or whatever.
Yeah. I suspect that the desire for the bad boy comes from pre-human evolutionary lines, you know, when there wasn't really any kind of higher brain function. And so it was looking at physical characteristics, the sort of lizard brain, you know, where it's, you know, I think that's where that comes from. That probably doesn't answer the question, though. Sorry.
But, yeah, that's the point of would monogamy... I mean, which evolution would you rather go with? The evolution of what we as humans are trying to do now versus what we were doing, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, which was a complete accident. what we're trying to accomplish now, making things better for everyone, that's intentional. That's purposeful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Darwin, he's an asshole, but... Well, Darwinism. Darwinism's a bitch. Darwinism's a sociopath, but it's worked.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think getting away from the more abstract thought of it, getting back to sort of more the sort of real world applications, I think that if we suddenly decided to revert entirely to a traditionalist family tomorrow, and everyone had to get married to whoever they were dating, or if they weren't dating someone, they'd have to find someone to marry, you know, within a 6-month period or something like that. If that was like mandated by the state, I think we would end up in a better position than we're in now, even with all the problems that would cause. Because I really do think it's harmful for children to be raised by a single parent. And I don't think it's necessarily the fault of the single parent. I just think that, you know, living in the modern world and also raising more a child or more than one is a lot of work for any one person, which is why I think evolutionarily it required two people to do, you know. I mean, kids are a lot of work. I come from a family of lots, you know, I've got 16 cousins, and so I, and most of them are younger than me, so I know what kids are like, and I know what my aunties and uncles are like, and I've seen so many examples. The more I've gone out in the world, the more I've been so glad that I had two good parents who stayed with each other. I mean, that was just, I can tell how much more emotionally stable I am than these other people, and I'm pretty sure that all the happy people are the people whose parents probably stayed together. You know, I really do think that most of the psychologically healthy people are the ones that have had both. And Lewis, I'm just joking. I'm not suggesting that's what we should actually do.
No,
I
think
that if that happened, then I think it would end up with a better result in the long run than the result we're aiming for now in the long run. You know.
Well, what Sargon was getting at was in terms of what would be better for the child, not for the man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I wasn't thinking of the man. I was thinking of the kids. I really do think it's unhealthy for the kids. And the thing is, I've got, like, you know, loads of friends who are in their 30s now, and they've been dating for the last 15 years or so, and when they were young, they would get whatever they could take and all that sort of thing. And as they're getting older, it really is the MGTOW thing, the wall and all that, it's all true. It's yeah. All absolutely true. The hamster wheel especially. And I've noticed that when they get involved with a woman who has kids, and a couple of them have, a few of them have, and I've done this myself, the kids need a father. That's the thing that strikes me the most about all the stories. I mean, this one guy was just knocking around with this chav woman who was, you know, he was just having fun with her. But he'd end up, because she was so low class, he'd end up spending time with the kids, and she's got two sons. And they adored having him around. They would play fight with him, and he liked it, you know. But she was such an unappealing prospect. If she was just slightly more, like, taking care of herself, then he probably would have gone for it, just because he liked the kids, you know. And they clearly, I mean, you know, he's not a MGTOW, so, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily he's a traditionalist, but he's just a guy. And I think, you know, he probably would have been perfectly happy to take them on his own, because it would have been good for those kids. And because you get something out of the relationship as well with the child, you know. I think a lot of MGTOWs do spend a lot of time making sure they're very closed off to the idea.
Yeah.
And I can understand why, you know, I really can understand why. But kids are fun, you know, I like kids.
Yeah, and kids like to have fun. They like to have a sense of security and a sense of, you know, this guy is around, he's the protector. Because, I mean, yeah, mommy's the protector, but, I mean, kids watch TV, and they can make sense of little scrawny woman, bigger guy.
Yeah, I think it's almost evolutionary, to be honest, because, I mean, my girlfriend at the moment, well, she's got a 4-year-old daughter, which is, this is something I haven't told the MGTOWs. So yes, I'm dating a woman with a young girl. But the thing is, I can't help it. I'm in love with this woman. It's going to work. I'm a tradcon now. No, I'm not really. But the thing is, her daughter, I've noticed the change since I've been around. You know, before she was an absolute little hellion. But as soon as I just speak, she listens. You know, whereas when her mother speaks, she doesn't listen. and I think it's something to do with the voice. I've got quite a loud shout, so I've used it a couple of times, and now she doesn't like it, and now she knows that if she's going in the wrong direction, I'm going to shout, and she doesn't do it, and it's this kind of level of authority from just the booming of the voice that I think is the thing that really affects them. I don't think that women can necessarily do that. They kind of screech, and that's not the same thing.
No, it's more of an annoying shrill,
yeah,
than a commanding boom.
Yeah, it's I think evolutionarily kids have been, I think that's definitely something that human children need. I think that we could do a lot worse than returning to traditional values.
Oh God, yeah.
They produced really good societies. You can't just look at the effect, and then they became shit like this. But they did produce great societies,
Oh yeah. And you're absolutely right. I mean, non-patriarchal societies—they fuck.
Well, don't even want to know.
Well, okay, so family-oriented societies—they did. They thrived. They made it. That's why they're the ones that are still around.
Yeah, and there seems to be this kind of fantasy of we can change things and expect them to stay the same. It's like, look, the only reason things are as they are is because we repeatedly do certain things. And if you stop repeatedly doing these things, then you lose the benefits of having repeatedly done these things, And this seems to be like the entire mindset is just that, oh, this is here to stay and it's never going away. And just as someone who reads history, I just think that is the most ludicrously suicidal thought that to entertain. I mean, but I think it was Will Durant summing up Aristotle that he said, you are what you repeatedly do. Excellence then is a habit and not an act. And I think that's absolutely right. If you don't go to the gym regularly, you don't keep your muscles, and you don't keep fit, everything atrophies. And yep. I think societal institutions, I think this is why we're sliding into sort of totalitarianism now. These kids don't have a father figure. I think that really does make them go for anything else with authority, to latch onto.
Yeah, and I mean, kids crave structure. They Absolutely. Want to be given boundaries. They want someone to look up to. And, I guess I'll just come out and say it. Women nurture children, but men make them grow up, from what I've observed. I mean...
Sorry, say that again, sorry. A friend of mine just... someone asked me earlier if I was going to mention the game. It's like, yeah, I talked about the game earlier, actually, mate. But, sorry, he just messaged me with the new stuff, so sorry, that really put me off that. Could you repeat that, please? I've just closed that window, so I can't do that again.
On the general rule, that's what I meant to say before, on the general rule, women nurture children, but men make them grow up.
Yeah, I think so. I think in Game of Thrones, where there's the one who lives in the Eyrie, and she's
never seen an episode.
No, okay. Well, people who've seen it will know. But there's this woman, this like Duchess or something, or of this Eyrie, and she's got like an 8-year-old son she still breastfeeds, and I think that is the sort of extreme version of the instinct that mothers have.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's one of those things that when you see it, it's gross. It's repulsive. I don't know how women feel about it. I should probably ask. But I find it really repugnant to see like an 8 or 9-year-old boy suckling at his mother's teat. And this is coming from like a primordial sort of emotional place. Where there's something about that that's just like, no, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. I feel the need to sort of take the child out to do archery or something when I'm watching Game of Thrones. There's something about that that strikes me as very wrong. So,
yeah. No, I completely understand. I don't go out looking for that stuff, so I haven't seen it. But now that you made me think about it, no, that's no.
Yeah,
that's not okay.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. I think it is the sort of the masculine position. I mean, that's maybe not being fair, because I can think of plenty of women, I mean, in my own family, who would have said to their own sons, get out and do something or whatever. I think it's maybe women who pander to the to the motherly instinct, maybe, you know, without being realists.
Right, right. And as I said, it's on the general rule. I mean, yeah, you got mothers to say go out and do something and so on and so forth, but on the general rule, yeah, I'm going to have to stand by that.
Yeah. What do you think of Stefan Molyneux?
That was the person I wasn't going to mention.
Why weren't you going to mention him, just out of interest?
A lot of people are really divided on Steph. Mm. And I mean, his talking on how to better parent, not strike your children, and you know all that kind of stuff, yeah, I can see where he's coming from, and I do agree with a lot of it. But yeah, his beliefs on anarcho-capitalism are a lot in line with mine, but not completely. But right. On the general rule, I like the guy. He's all right. I mean, yeah, he's contradicted himself a lot, but most of us do. We just don't like to own up to it.
Yeah, I'm not actually. I don't. That's not something I'd lambast him for. I mean, I think anyone's got the right to change their position on something. Your opinion changes. You know, I'm probably contradicting things I said a year ago. You know, and so yeah, I don't see anything really necessarily wrong with that. But I want to like him. You know, I want to like him, but there's something about him I find really unlikable.
His arrogant attitude.
No, I've got an arrogant attitude. I like arrogance. sorry.
No. So it's
something people tell me a lot.
Nah, but...
Fine. But yeah, I don't know. I think that he makes too many assumptions on some of the points, on some of his premises. And so sometimes I think he's right, and sometimes I think he's wrong. But I think that he doesn't think he's ever wrong.
Yeah, it's his overconfidence that I don't appreciate, because, I mean, he doesn't really try to understand from where the other person is coming from. He's trying to bring them up to a place where he can understand where they're coming from, not trying to understand where they're coming from. And that does get on my nerves, because you have to explain it from a place you're not used to explaining it from, and that's just a whole bunch of miscommunication waiting to happen.
Yeah, I think so. Philip Armstrong, what did I say that makes me a tool? I don't know what you're referring to, Vex. It's a delay. So, he doesn't seem prepared to consider that his position might be wrong. And like you said, I think that he isn't necessarily empathizing with the person. I think he's empathizing with the position he would think of himself in their shoes. And so he's thinking, well, I would deal with it like this, this, that, and the other. And therefore, that's the only way to deal with it. And therefore, that's how they should deal with it. And I'm probably just as guilty of this. But I don't think he's the sort to broach sort of criticism of his position. He doesn't seem to be.
And no, that's one of the things I don't like about him. It doesn't seem like he's critical of himself, yeah.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't try to be.
I think that he thinks he's thought it out already, and therefore he can tell everyone else without anything else creeping in.
Yeah, and as I said, I do like the guy, but that's like one of those things I try to distance myself from on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of his movie breakdowns are probably quite true. You know, I mean, he's probably right on a sort of, you know, armchair psychological analysis of it.
Yeah, and I don't like how he labels the truth about blank instead of my opinion on blank. I find that very
pretentious.
No. Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't think I've ever made a video. If I did, I'd be doing it ironically. I agree. That it's very preachy, and not a fan.
But yeah, you know,
so what's
that,
What's your anarcho-capitalist views then? What are they exactly?
I'm about to get a whole bunch of crap on here because a lot of people.
You are. That's why I asked.
Oh, well, it's like at least one ally on there. basically, I believe the state is legitimized aggression. It is people saying, yes, I have the right to take from you because mm-hmm. everyone else says I can. Mm. Taxation is theft, all that.
I don't
like legitimized force, because then you've got, when the force gets a little overzealous, then, you know, people are just going to say, well, that's the government, they're allowed to do it.
Do you think that's maybe a consequence of the sort of totalitarian bent the United States government's having in the last 20 odd years or so?
Do I think anarcho-capitalism is?
Yeah, do you think that... Yeah, because I'm personally not really worried about the state applying force to me. I agree that that is what the state does, but I'm actually not that bothered about it, because in Britain the state's quite inept, so it does everything badly. But in America it's not. And
I don't know what you're talking about. Our government's as inept as it gets.
Well, your government isn't inept. Your government's inept when it wants to be inept. When it wants to be ruthlessly efficient, it is terrifying.
Okay, you got me there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. It's inept when it comes to your social needs, but you know, my government's just inept in all spheres, so it's kind of a... I don't worry about it too much. But when the American government puts its mind to something, it's fucking scary. You know? It can be ruthlessly efficient. So...
You got me there.
Kudos. That's you know, I'm impressed. I am impressed. It's, you know, there's no... I kind of look at it from a historical perspective where I'm not a part of it. And if I was looking at these things on paper, I'd be like, Jesus, the United States is masterminded by such brilliant bastards. You know? This is why I keep talking about conspiracies, because I'm like, look, right, I really think there is a conspiracy in the United States government. I think it's very small, and I think it's made up of very intelligent people. And so I really think we have to consider that there are more intelligent people than ourselves, and that they have got their fist on the steering wheel. You know, I don't think they're necessarily turning the wheels or, you know, pumping fuel through the engine, but I think that they're definitely driving the car.
All right, I'm going to have to actually just not do too much with the conspiracy. Because, I mean, we could go on for hours with that, but why I like anarcho-capitalism, I mean, mainly anarchy, I don't like anyone coming in and telling me what's good for me, what I should do with my money, and stealing it at the threat of a gun to my head or putting me in a cage. Just because, well, everyone said we could do it, so fuck you. I don't like that at all. I don't agree with it. It's crap. I mean, if people want to go ahead and, you know, form little communities and do it willingly, actually willingly, I have no problem with that. But to do it to other people who just want to be left the hell alone and then call it freedom or call it security is absolute bullshit. It's taking away choice. It's legitimizing violence. And there was somebody who said that there will always be force. It's just who commands it. And yeah, there will always be force. In order to live in a freer society, it's people who are willing to fight to defend their freedoms. The United States and most of the world, I'm talking 99.999% of it, could not make an anarchist society because they are so used to giving up power to a central authority figure. They couldn't even imagine having to honestly make it for themselves in cooperation that could turn bad without having someone there to reinforce it.
Okay, that's very interesting, actually. I kind of think that anarcho-capitalism is effectively what we had before we had proper states. It was very small and tribal, and it was very primitive. I'm not saying that like it was the same as now, obviously, or if an anarcho-capitalistic system was implemented now, because obviously the world's completely different. But I think there's always going to be violence, and I think that the consequence of violence is to become better at violence. And one way of becoming better at violence is to have more people who can be violent. And so I think inevitably, probably even within, like, if America today became entirely anarcho-capitalist and, like, cities became individual city-states and stuff like that, I think it would just end up being empires again, you know? I think people would end up conquering each other. And
yeah, and you're absolutely right, because of where we are now, people are, like the invasion of Iraq, people are so afraid, so run by their fear, that they will support one person saying, oh, this person did this, and they could potentially do all of this, so we need to go over there and kill their people before they have the ability to do this, this, and this. And they will follow blindly because of their own fear.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And instead, you know, instead of people fighting for themselves and what they believe and referring to violence as only the means of last resort, they'll go with their primordial fear and say, yes, let's get them before they get us.
Yeah, I think that's an inevitable consequence of states. Yeah, absolutely, especially when you've got a quite uninformed populace at the bottom of it who are the ones cheering. But what I'm saying is I think that it's inevitable that that will occur. I don't think that there's any kind of sustainable future in small sort of communes of people living as anarcho-capitalists, because at some point some of them won't have enough, and then they'll realize that if they just attack as a group this other group, they'll win, and a successful strategy goes on to be the dominant strategy. So I think we'll end up with states again. So there's no, I mean, what you're saying is what I interpret to be what you're saying is, in principle, a very noble and great thing, but I think it's highly, highly unworkable, given maybe just the nature of human beings, and like you say, with the fear, you know, the constant fear, why wouldn't they go to a state? You know, it'd be easier. They just want to get on with their lives, you know, they're scared.
Quite, so, and I'm sorry I have to interject on this, but you're right, state, being able to shift responsibility onto a bigger entity is what a lot of human beings just, they crave that. But by the same token, the state is responsible for more murders and more genocide than any private individual or group could ever be.
That is exactly the reason I keep getting annoyed when people, I don't want to go into conspiracies, but when people give government the benefit of the doubt, you know, and this isn't even conspiratorial. This is just like, you know, a class of people who want to protect themselves from criticism. And so whenever you, like with Snowden, with the NSA, and it's like, you know, you all agreed to build this. The engineers consented to building this. The people operating it consent to doing it. And everyone's okay with that. You know, it's, yeah, I've kind of lost my thread again. But, I think people are afraid, and I think they will always be afraid, and I think they will always, like you say, exactly, I think they will be happy, and they do crave to give the sort of, to give the responsibility, and that's where the grandeur of kings come from, you know, it's absolutely with, you know, everyone just, you know, oh yeah, that guy, he's such a great guy because he takes the responsibility off, the weight off my shoulders for decision making. You know, and if it all goes wrong, then, oh, you know, it's going to go badly for him. Because whenever kings lost their throne to mistakes they'd made, they always died. You know, there's never a happy ending for a king, really.
No.
No, or any ruler, you know, it's always the way. I think that that's an inevitable consequence of the human condition. I think that it's always going to be like that. So now that brings me on to the next question I want to ask you, actually. So tax is theft, then.
Taxation is theft.
Yeah. Do you want to explain, like, your rationale for that? Just because I've got competing view, and I'd like to discuss it with you.
All right. What happens if you don't pay your taxes?
Oh, you probably go to jail.
You get put in a cage.
Yeah.
Does that sound voluntary to you?
No, not at all. Nothing about society is voluntary. You're born into it, you've got no choice, and you are going to live and die in it. So No, it's not voluntary.
And then we get into something like that, but you can leave society.
I suppose technically it's possible, but how would you really do it?
Well, okay, so how do you define society? Do you define it as the collective group? Do you define it as a country, as a nation?
Yeah, probably the nation. I suppose just the individuals around you, realistically. And I suppose your conception of the size of the world dictates how much of a society you're in. It's entirely conceivable now to say we're in a global society because we're interacting. So we're sharing ideas, we're doing all that sort of thing. So I think you could quite easily say that society is just the people you interact with.
All right, so it's the people you interact with.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can leave that.
Right, but I think that... I think the infrastructure is also included in that. So if you're living in a city, then you're still part of that society. The roads, the sewers, the water supply, that sort of thing. So even if you were to cut off all contact with all other human beings and work from home doing, some sort of internet emailing system or something like that, then you would still be part of society because you're using resources that society has produced.
Right, provided. Right, right.
Yeah. So you'd have to be self-sufficient.
Completely self-sufficient. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So that would be quite difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It'd be difficult, but people like me would believe it's worth it. And yeah. It's not so much government, and I'd like to clarify that. It's not so much government that I want to leave society, it's the people. It's the fakeness of people, it's the two-facedness of people, it's the double speak. It's the people who say, I want freedom, blah, 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 no drone strikes, no drones over America, all this great stuff, and then they just do nothing. They don't do anything.
Hmm. And the thing is, there's not really that much space for them to actually do anything, is there? I mean, what mechanisms could they use to stop the president from drone striking?
I mean, if they really cared half as much as they claim they do, it would be an uprising. But they really don't. And that's why I say I don't believe people care half as much as they claim to about wanting the government to respect their feelings, respect their property rights, and respect their human rights, and such and so on and so forth, because they don't act on it. They don't do anything.
Yeah, I think the bread and circuses really have got people in the brain, and they are... I mean, they may as well be asleep. I would rather that they did nothing than support the present system. That's one of my things. One of the things I was saying to my dad over the weekend when I was chatting to him, I really love my dad. He's a really intelligent guy, but he's very blue pill. And, up until, recent years, he's always been a very staunch supporter of the system. And I've never really got along with the system so much. So I've always been like... And now the real flaws are starting to show. Even my dad is like, maybe this isn't... what I was raised to believe it was going to be, sort of thing. And I was saying to him, if you don't really support the Conservatives anymore, because he was a Conservative voter his whole life, if you don't really support them, don't vote for anyone else. Because he was like, I don't really support anyone, but I'm probably going to vote Labour. And it's like, no, just don't. Just the fewer people vote, the less legitimacy the system has, and the more a conversation has to be had over whether this is a system that's still working. And that's when we can have some sort of internal reform rather than violent revolution, But if people keep voting hammer and tongs for two people who are still not giving them what they're asking for, then surely that's going to provoke a revolution.
Eventually. And there was a comment on here asking what I expect people to do. What I expect people to do is put up or shut up. I expect them to either stand by their word of wanting to get something done, or just shut the fuck up already. That's what I want. If you're going to complain about a problem, then fix it or stop talking about it. The bully, there was this one quote, if you do not have a solution, you don't have a problem. Otherwise, it's just an inconvenience that you have to deal with. That's what I would like to see done.
It's pulling them away from the shit they watch. I think it was in 1984 that George Orwell pointed out in the character of Winston, I think it was, where he was musing on the plebs and how much power the plebs had if only they knew it. And yeah. I think that is eternally, and that was, you know, 1948, 1949, and I think that is eternally going to be a problem, if not further into the future, given the absolutely abysmal state of the education systems at the moment in the Western world. They are unbelievable. It's only now I'm an adult and I look back that I can see why I just was such a poor fit for public education, you know. It drives me crazy now I think about it, but... Yeah, so yeah, I think that maybe they're always going to be like that. So I'm actually honestly thinking, is democracy a good idea?
But do I see it for happening? No. Do I see it happening anytime soon? No. I foresee what we have now going on for quite some time. And instead of people kind of like... what was his name? Jawa. Instead of actually, going through problem solving, they're just going to deflect to other people. They're just going to say, "Well, I don't want to have to solve my problems, or I don't have the solution, so I'm just going to point out yours." Yeah. And that's the thing. That's all that's ever going to be. I don't want to solve my problems, so I'm just going to point to something else.
Yeah. I. There is a terrible habit of people countering your argument with an argument against you, maybe personal, maybe not, and that's like, well, yeah, but that's not going to debunk what I've said. You know, even if those things are true, my argument still stands because you haven't attacked my argument. So,
but yeah, that's more or less my views on anarchy. I'm sorry, I didn't even finish answering your question.
Yeah, the taxation thing.
Okay, let's go back to that.
Well, that's all right. I'm perfectly happy with tangents. If we say that disconnecting yourself from society would require you to effectively move out into the woods,
yeah.
I mean, do you think that's feasible for modern life? Do you think that the state's going to allow that? I mean, do you think the police won't go over and say, no, you can't live here, you've got to move on, and maybe they'll treat you as a vagrant or something. I mean, do you think they're going to allow that?
There is a high chance that when I, because that is my plan, that actually is my plan, because, I mean, there is, as far as I'm concerned, hell is dealing with people, so moving out into the middle of the wilderness and, you know, by myself, that is my plan, and I'll let you know what I find out, but do I think they will? Yeah, I think they will give me a hassle about it, and for a while I will appease them because, well, all the work I've put into this and all the work I'm going to put into this is going to be useless to a dead man. So
you're planning on actually abandoning civilization altogether then?
Yep.
So no internet connection.
I'm sorry?
No internet connection.
That is going to be the most difficult part of it. That really, really is, but yes.
Jesus, how long in the future can we be expecting this?
It's going to be about 5 years, maybe 7. Okay, so my plan is to work in the oil fields. Now that I can do this, I'm going to try to accumulate $200,000 in my pocket, and along with my land and all that great stuff, and then just kind of fade into obscurity.
Right, so live on a farm, effectively, a homestead.
Effectively. But, unfortunately, it's looking more and more like I'm going to, have tools break. And I mean, I'm working on, smelting, trying to learn smelting so I can melt down the iron and make tools that way. And a lot of people are going to think it's not a good plan, and people are going to think that, they're going to see all kinds of problems with it. But yeah. In comparison to all the problems that I've seen here, totally worth it. Absolutely, 100% worth it.
Okay, that's very interesting. That's very proactive. Yeah, that's very interesting. So it's the option of last resort, then?
No, that's pretty much the plan, because society, it's not going to get better. The people are just going to keep complaining and doing nothing, and, oh, government is getting too big, it's getting all kinds of bad, blah, 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 and then they're just going to do nothing. That's what's going to happen. And you know what? I don't want to go down with that. I don't want to live in that. I mean, even if I have to be completely by myself, fine, so be it. It's better than they...
So the state is going to... I mean, how are you going to, like, pitch it to them? Are you going to be like, I'm not paying any taxes anymore? How is that going to fly?
as I said, and money, all the work I'm doing is no good for a dead man. So if I say I'm not going to pay taxes, either police are going to laugh and say, give me the taxes, or it's going to come to me getting shot and killed.
Right. So you're going to pay the taxes then?
Yep.
How are you going to do that without a job? Are you going to basically have the tax money for your life in advance? Or?
That's what I'm going to try to do. That's what the $200,000's for.
Right, okay.
Inflation will catch up with me eventually, though, so...
Yeah. I suppose, I mean, surely it's based on your earnings, and if your earnings are low because you're not trading in money, then at least there's no paper trail saying that you've made loads of money. This seems like a bit too extreme for my taste. This comes back to the taxation is theft thing. You really have to go a long way to make it so that it's not theft. You know what I mean? Like, well, no, that's the wrong way to say it, actually. You've really got to go a long way to make sure that that is the truth, though. Because I think that if I'm benefiting from all the things that society brings, then I do think that people in that society should be taxed to pay for those things. Otherwise, how are we going to have those things? And so I plan on using the internet and electricity and heating and roads and hospitals and all those sort of things that we pay for with taxes here. Not necessarily heating, but... And so I don't think it's theft necessarily that is taking the money. I think it's obligation. As someone who's benefiting from the system, I think that I have an obligation, therefore, to the system. And I think that if everyone thought the same thing, then... You know, you wouldn't necessarily need to use force.
Well, that's when and that was one of the things that I was waiting to address, was that's when they actually are voluntary, when you want to pay them, because you believe that the services offered are worth the money you're giving in. Me, I've seen the public school system. I'm sorry.
That's an interesting point. Sorry, please carry on.
I've seen the public school system, and I'm less than impressed. I've seen the entire setup for the reason for the public school system, and it's a joke.
Yeah.
I learned more from the internet than I did from the public school system.
This again, the conversation I was having with my dad on Saturday. I said to him, you know, I've never needed Pythagoras' theorem in my life, and yet I still know it. And it's just like, why do I know that? When I first did my first tax return, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I absolutely no fucking idea. And just when I moved out first from home, and I had no idea about what bills I had to pay and all this sort of thing. You know what? Yeah, it was fucking awful. It's weirdly abstract at a young age, isn't it? You know, I mean, why would I need to know such abstract concepts so young? You'd think that, like, Pythagoras' theorem and that sort of thing didn't really apply to real life, would be higher schooling, you know, higher learning.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not, and let's take into consideration that kids are active. They like to run around. They learn more by doing than by sitting down watching a teacher, you know, scribble on a chalkboard.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I don't want if kids aren't learning and they have to be doped up on pills.
That's fucked up.
I do not support that at all.
No, it's fucked up. That's the thing, you should go into politics.
Irony. Back when I was a libertarian, I was actually considering that heavily. But
I don't think you could do worse, I think.
Yeah, you definitely do worse.
But I think what you're saying and how you're saying it would probably resonate with a lot of people. Cause, I mean, if your position changed from move out into the woods and be a mountain man and to I want to reform society because it's clearly not working for the majority of people, then I think you probably reach quite a large audience with that message. I think there are, I mean, you put yourself across clearly, so. It's not like you shouldn't have a voice, you know?
And no. I'm going to have to disagree because I was part of the political system. I was a state delegate to the... I made it from the county convention to the state convention, and I saw it. I saw what happened there. I saw, good old boy politicians being railroaded through. I saw what happened to decent people who wanted to take political office. It doesn't happen. I've been a part of it. I've actually done more than just vote. I was actually one of those people who decides who gets put on the ballot.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think this is something that's evident from the outside as well. You can look at the system you're currently operating under and see that there's very much that issue. I think it was Dan Carlin. Do you ever listen to Dan Carlin? I don't know who does and who doesn't. No, he's a podcaster. He's really, really good. And he was saying how I think it was this podcast where he said the Soviet Union had a re-election rate of like 96% for its politicians, and the United States has got 97%. And it's just like, wow, that's a hell of a re-election rate. You know, from someone outside, I'd be looking at that and thinking that's fucking suspicious. You know, people who are doing a bad job are not leaving office.
And that's another thing. Jawa actually brought this up. Get money out of politics. Okay, so, I mean, you know, PACs and all that whatnot, that's fine. Get rid of the PACs, whatever. How hard is it for a banker to talk to a politician at their house? I mean, it doesn't even have to be a briefcase of money anymore. They can just, you know, electronically wire like $10 million to them, say, do this, this, and this is yours.
Yeah.
How hard is that? You don't get money out of politics. That's impossible. Plus, you've got special favors that can be given. Oh, your kid wants to go to Harvard. Okay, well, I think I can arrange that. But getting money out of politics, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean...
That's interesting. So if we accept that money is always going to be in politics, how could we... therefore level the playing field?
You don't.
Is there no way? I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, I take that back. When I said, and here's something that everyone here might like, holding politicians accountable via the representatives in physical violence. I mean, what happens with, you know, vote them out? Vote them out! Oh, I'm going to take my $10 million in lobbyist money and my $200,000 a year in congressional pension and fade away into obscurity. Oh, it's so terrible. It's so terrible. I'm seriously, you guys. No. If you want really to hold representatives accountable and make it a level playing field, stone them if they don't hold true to their promises.
So you're thinking contracts?
Contracts, yes.
That's a very interesting idea, and I actually would like to talk about that more. Your Prove the Pay Gap video was very well thought out. That was when I put the mirror up of it, everyone was very impressed at how well constructed it was. And I thought it was too. Have you got any kind of background in this sort of thing?
I'm sorry, what do you mean?
Just, I don't know, some sort of legal background or something like that.
No. Whenever I was, thinking about arguments, I had this friend in high school who would pick apart everything, so I had to continually, like, close loopholes, and he got me in the habit of just closing loopholes in my mind. So.
Interesting. So I'm actually the opposite. I think I'm critical of things, but I do leave loopholes open quite often. So sorry, that's a bit of a waffle. Go on.
But yeah, It was always a pick-apart thing, so I had to continually train my mind to close loopholes behind me wherever I could, because I knew if I left one thing out, he would sit there and pick at it and pick at it. So, yeah.
So, what was the question again? Shit, I was literally just on the tip of my tongue there, and then I read something that guy T said, and now I've lost it.
Yeah, the comments, looking at the comments can definitely throw you off. I need to stop doing that.
Yeah. There's like questions in there. That's why, you know, it starts with
right.
What was I going to say? It was, we were talking about money and politics. What the hell? It was something that you were going to explain about the contracts. How would you write the contracts?
Okay, so you know how when politicians come into office, they always have, you know, these great big promises and how they're going to make everything good and so on and so forth. But
they never
follow through.
Yeah, and they're full of shit.
Yeah, so you actually have to hold them accountable, and that's something that people don't like to do. They don't hold their representatives accountable.
I mean, how would it be done? Like, in the contract, like, say, Barack Obama, he said, oh, I'll change. And, I mean, the world, things have changed, but worse. And certainly not how he said they were going to change. So,
well, no, like closing Gitmo.
Yeah.
He promised to close Gitmo. He didn't close it. So therefore, he'd be in violation of the contract and have to adhere to the punishments that he's agreed to take.
See, I think that's a fantastic idea. Now, the thing is, that kind of makes me think, well, what's the need for politicians then?
Exactly.
Because if you could literally have an apparatus of state that was effectively ungoverned, because what happens in this country is the politicians take office, but the people below them don't change. The people running the institutions don't change. They just get different marching orders. And, I mean, sometimes they change, but by and large they don't. And so it's, and like, you have like metropolitan votes for police and stuff, I think. I think they have had one. I do recall that being in the news at some point. And so you could effectively have, like via the internet, a system of effectively direct democracy where someone could propose some legislation, or, you know, it could go through rounds of, you know, being proposed, and people would have to see it. I mean, intellectuals would be talking about it. It'd be on the news, you know, the proposal by, you know, so-and-so, and it's just upvoted, effectively, you know? It's had 16 million views and 500,000 upvotes, and therefore it becomes part of the public debate now. We're going to debate this, and then we're going to have a referendum on it in, say, 2 weeks or a month or however long, and then it's just only electronically done, and then effectively, you know, it can just print out a sort of transcript of what's going to be sent to the institutions that will then enact those changes. And, I mean, obviously that does give power to the people at the top of those institutions, but if they're democratically installed anyway, then what's the problem? You know, we can unelect someone we don't want in that position. And those positions become scrutinized then, you know, because one of the things that doesn't happen now is excessive scrutiny of those positions. You know, everyone scrutinizes the fucking politicians. It's like they are just middlemen, you know? They are just middlemen. Why are we talking to them? You know, we don't have to be talking to them. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying direct democracy is a wise idea all the time, but I think if we gave certain controls, like basically kind of redesigning a modern version of the, you know, American Republic, you know, we can have fail-safes to make sure that certain things aren't allowed to go through the system. You know, no one can propose a genocide and have it popularly voted in. Yeah, effectively, you know, like, yeah, it would be a new constitution for, you know, each country that participates in this, I suppose. But this is the thing. I think that you could eliminate politicians from the equation, which I think would make a fuckload of difference.
Yeah. Sorry, bro. I'm going to have to cut this short. I'm going to have to go make dinner.
No, that's cool, man. I wasn't really expecting this to go on for very long. I was just going to test a few things, and then, you know, that'd be it. It was just a notification to tell everyone that I was going to have a hang out with Goodfella on Saturday. You know, everything's cool. It's just we've been busy.
Oh, it was fun, man. It was good.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I can imagine I'll be inviting you again at some point in the future. I've got lots of people I need to invite, though, and I like having one-on-ones because I like picking people's brains. So, I get to like ask a lot of questions because I like knowing what people think. But yeah, no, it's been really good, and I've really enjoyed it. And yeah. I'm glad you have as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Take it easy, man.
You too.
Thanks for watching, everyone. See you all later.
Have a good one, guys.